the polls. So they put up barricades so they couldn't punch their holes. Chads, that is, Duval County, Miami-Dade. Before the votes were counted, five Supremes stepped in. Told all the voters, hey, we want George to win. Stop counting votes was their solemn invocation. And that's how George finally got his coronation. Rigged, that is, illegitimate, no moral authority.
It is true that Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, after which there was a commitment to give 40 acres and a mule. That's where the argument to this day of reparations stopped. We never got the 40 acres. We went all the way to Herbert Hoover, and we never got the 40 acres. We didn't get the mule. So we decided we'd ride this donkey as far as it would take us.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. I mean, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Okay.
And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
Instead of a convention, he's going to have a masquerade ball in New York City, a Hollywood facade put up by extremists pushing moderates out on the stage to mask the special interest agenda that has governed America for the last 3.5 years. He'll do a little sleight of the hand. He will claim that he's putting the middle class first, but hide from view his special interest-laden Republican platform. Bush has misled America for the last 4 years, and now he wants to mislead us for 4 more nights.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across the sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys, well, keep your poise, you got no choice but to join the army in your prime and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome.
Every day next week, we will be highlighting the simple truth about the administration of George Bush. Mission not accomplished. So many missions were not accomplished in the last 4 years. And this time, there's no one for George Bush to blame but himself.
Come and listen to my story about a boy named Bush. His IQ was zero and his head was up his tush. He drank like a fish while he was driving all about. But that didn't matter cause his daddy bailed him out. DUI, that is, criminal record cover-up. Well, the first thing you know, little Georgie goes to Yale. He can't spell his name, but they never let him fail. He spends all his time hanging out with student folk, and that's when he learns how to snort a line of coke. Blow, that is, white gold, nose candy. The next thing you know, there's a war in Vietnam. Kin folks say, George, stay at home with Mom. Let the common people get maimed and scarred. We'll buy you a spot in the Texas National Guard. Cushy, that is, country club, nose candy. 20 years later, George gets a little bored. He trades in the booze, says, Jesus is my Lord. He said, now the White House is the place I want to be. So he called his daddy's friends, and they called the GOP. Gun owners, that is, Falwell, Jesse Helm. Come November 7th, the election ran late. Kin folks said, Jeb, give the boy your state. Don't let those folks get into the polls. So they put up barricades so they couldn't punch their holes. Chads, that is, Duval County, Miami-Dade. Before the votes were counted, five Supremes stepped in. Told all the voters, hey, we want George to win. Stop counting votes was their solemn invocation. And that's how George finally got his coronation. Rigged, that is, illegitimate, no moral authority.
It is true that Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, after which there was a commitment to give 40 acres and a mule. That's where the argument to this day of reparations stopped. We never got the 40 acres. We went all the way to Herbert Hoover, and we never got the 40 acres. We didn't get the mule. So we decided we'd ride this donkey as far as it would take us.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. I mean, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Okay.
And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
Instead of a convention, he's going to have a masquerade ball in New York City, a Hollywood facade put up by extremists pushing moderates out on the stage to mask the special interest agenda that has governed America for the last 3.5 years. He'll do a little sleight of the hand. He will claim that he's putting the middle class first, but hide from view his special interest-laden Republican platform. Bush has misled America for the last 4 years, and now he wants to mislead us for 4 more nights.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag.
I heard a local talk show host saying this week that there was no news going on right now, that it's a slow news time. I think he forgot that there's a war going on. Anybody remember that? There's a war going on? I don't know how you can say that. There's no news right now. I guess it's up to the press to tell us whether there's any news or not. It doesn't matter if there's a war going on. And, I hate it that all those poor folks over there, our soldiers, our men and women, are being, frankly, ignored. Ignored by the press. I don't know how anybody could say that there's no news in the world when young American men or women are being killed every day in a strange land for absolutely nothing. To say that there's no news, well, that strikes me as a little bit... that's not what I would say exactly. We've got everybody here with us today from the Democratic Underground on the Internet and Democrats.com and quite a few Internet sites around the country. Glad to have you with us, as always. Lots of news this week. Of course, we've still got the Swift Boat veteran liars in the news. And Alice Cooper, I thought one of the best things I saw a week long was Alice Cooper saying that this was treason against rock and roll, the Democrats are. And the report came out, said it was torture at Abu Ghraib prison. And my God, one of the strangest things this week, Republicans attacking Dick Cheney. Woo! Thought I'd never see that. And then we have the head clown in the White House making the claim that he is unchanged since taking office. Can you imagine that? All this country's been through since that man took office, and I do mean took office, and he says he's unchanged. Well, Swift Boat story is still alive and well, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last, but I think we'll put a stop to it pretty soon now. I think they've gotten as much mileage out of it. But, a lot of you remember the famous saying, "Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" That was just over 50 years ago when Joseph Welch spoke those infamous words to Joseph McCarthy, good old Ann Coulter favorite Joseph McCarthy, during the McCarthy hearings. And those words, in my opinion, signaled the beginning of a process that restored integrity and honor to our nation for a while anyway. Those words served to wake up millions of Americans who'd been very apathetic about Joseph McCarthy's baseless accusations against many good, decent American citizens. So those of you that are young and don't know a lot about the McCarthy hearings, you really ought to look it up. You see some terrible things went on then. You know, those words seemed to signal the end of McCarthy's bullying tactics and spelled the beginning of the end of the man himself. He died a miserable drunk. And it was a time when McCarthy was willing to destroy anyone in his path. He saw himself as judge, jury, and executioner of those whose reputations he destroyed with his lies and fabrications, and he was good at it. Those words finally woke up the American public and displayed the true character, a favorite word of Republicans, the true character of one Joseph McCarthy. It had finally become evident that McCarthy was a man willing to do anything necessary, no matter how evil and devious, to achieve his goal of political power. You know, we've got a strikingly similar situation in this country right now. We've got a man of little or no character using any means available to him to destroy the reputation of an honorable and decent United States senator. And if you cannot realize that George W. Bush himself is sanctioning these attacks on Senator John Kerry, then you really are politically blind. You know, all one has to do is examine the past political tactics of the Bush family to know that this latest vile attack on Senator Kerry is nothing more than standard operating procedure for them. They did it to Mike Dukakis. They did it to Max Cleveland. They even did it to one of their very own, John McCain. And now it's Senator Kerry's turn to feel the sting of the Bush family treachery. You remember back when Clinton was in office and all the Republicans were screaming, "Character matters"? That's all you heard, "Character matters." Do you remember putting George W. Bush up on a Republican pedestal, swearing that he was a man of great character?
And all of our Christian friends were exclaiming how wonderful it was to have a good Christian man in the White House. Oh, my. How great. Well, let's just pretend for a moment that George Bush is not guilty of all the lies and distortions he's been accused of concerning the war in Iraq. I said let's pretend. Let's pretend that all of his actions up till now have been very Christian-like. Let's pretend George Bush has a clean slate up till now, okay? I ask you, would any man of good character allow these vile attacks on Senator Kerry to take place in his name? Would a man of good character stand by and allow his people to trash the reputation of a man who served honorably for 20 years in the United States Senate? Would a man of good character who didn't serve in Vietnam and who's committed thousands of American troops to war dare comment negatively about the military service of a man who did serve in Vietnam? Would a man of good character tell reporters that Senator Kerry served honorably and should be proud of his record and then behind closed doors allow his people to say just the opposite? No, you know, this whole Swift Boat Liars debacle is not any kind of referendum on the character of Senator Kerry. Senator Kerry's character has long ago passed the test. It's a test of the character of George W. Bush. And if you're going to be completely honest with yourself, you'll admit that George W. Bush is willing to trash Senator Kerry in any way he thinks necessary. It ought to be extremely evident to any fair-minded American that Mr. Bush is conducting yet another slimy, sleazy, unethical, but typically Bush-style campaign. Bush has proven once again that he's totally devoid of character. I can only hope and pray that the American public will once again rise up and say they don't want their political leaders to behave in such a manner, just like they did with Joseph McCarthy. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you no sense of decency? Those words are what it took to bring that debacle to an end 50 years ago. And I'm hoping that maybe, just maybe, and it's a big maybe, there might be an ounce of decency in this White House. They might just show the American public that they have some decent thoughts and stop this ridiculous, ridiculous attack on a good and decent man. We're going to go to Charles in Fort Myers. Charles, welcome to the show.
You know, we're outnumbered here, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen you talk. Well, you're always honest, but, my God, I'm somebody that believes in the truth and really cares about life.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Saying, yeah, I finally found, you know, I've heard you before, but you're telling the truth like it should be said. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the network that showed the thousands faces of all those young people that died in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could hardly hold my tears back from seeing that.
Well, it's hard. And, you know, like I said, we've got a local talk show host this week saying that there's no news going on in the world.
Yeah. Well, when you see those faces and et cetera and realize that they're not around, it's a little different than giving it like sports scores that they do on the radio saying three died in Iraq today and just go on with the rest of the news.
Right.
It's unbelievable. I'm surprised you say Bush is a Christian. My God,
I don't think he is. He claims to be, but he doesn't show any of the Christian principles I've been taught all of my life, very few of them.
Well, likewise, my spiritual growth, and that's a daily progress, is last time I checked, I have to admit my wrongs, I have to be honest with myself, and I have to say I'm sorry when I make mistakes. That's what I have to do as a Christian. So he doesn't represent any of those things. I haven't seen any evidence of any of those elements,
no,
which are basic. And talk about taking swords and pounding them into plowshares. I mean, this oil-conquering, invasive president is just reading us down to being the most despised country in the world.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, this character, no man who is a Christian and of good character would allow these lies and attacks to go on, and he's admitted himself that he thinks they're not true, and yet, you know, behind everybody's back, he's allowing it to go on. It's a lack of character like probably never has been in this White House before. John, Chuck, thank you so much for your call. I do appreciate it very, very much. Let's see. Let's go right back to the phone. Let's go to John in Fort Myers. John, welcome to the show.
Yes, well, hail to that last caller and the Christian values. I agree with him. I saw a news report during the week where the president was down at the ranch meeting with his advisors to plan a strategy in Iraq, but I didn't see any military people there. I saw Condoleezza Rice. I saw the vice president. I think I saw Rumsfeld. I'm not sure. But if you're going to plan a war strategy, wouldn't you do it with the military people?
Has there been any evidence of any planning in this war? I've seen precious little of it.
You have a good point there. And you know, I just, these Republicans will have to explain to me why they're opposed to social programs that would help the people of this country, whether it be health insurance or welfare programs of any sort. Why they're opposed to that and not wanting to spend money for those programs, but they'll throw $129 billion into a sand pile halfway around the world and give those people the wealth that we have here. I do not understand this, and I can't believe these Republicans can condone this type of thing and support this type of thing. This country shouldn't be at war with anybody.
Not right now.
And especially the group that we are at war with. I've said before, if you watch the movie Lawrence of Arabia, you understand completely why you never get involved with Arabs in these kinds of fights. And it's just very disappointing. And then the way they're running their campaign, arresting people who protest at Bush rallies and for trespassing and things of that sort. If you watch Bill Moyers, well, if you missed it, you can catch it Sunday.
Oh, I saw it last night. It made me want to throw up in several ways.
And did you see the interview last week with Lou Dobbs and the jobs going out of this country?
Yeah.
And, of course, last night they showed on Bill Moyers these parties that these big corporations throw, not only for the Democrats, but for the Republicans. They're, as the man said, they're putting their money on red and black at the roulette table because they don't know who's going to win, and they want to have interests in there that can deal with their problems. So I've said it also before that we have no representation as individuals out here, and I see it more every day. We just don't have representation, and we need to, first of all, get President Bush out of office and make these guys understand that they need to represent the American people, not the special interests and the corporate interests and the foreign interests. They've got to care about the people in this country. And I don't know why these people don't understand that.
Well, you know, and the one thing is, you know, they preach that constantly. We got to take care of ourselves first. Well, they mean ourselves by me, 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 me. That's what they mean. They don't mean us.
And, of course, in Michael Moore's movie, that one legislator, he's a black fellow, says, "My dear boy, do you think we read all of these pieces of legislation that come before us?"
Yeah.
They just pass stuff up there for their buddies, and they don't care for you and me a bit.
That's right.
Thank you, sir.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for your call, John. You know, it is true. I how many of you saw Now with Bill Moyers last night? Mm-mm-mm-mm. I'll tell you what. I really hated that program last night. It made me feel terrible. Not that I didn't know what it was about. Not that I haven't seen what it was all about. But it shoved it right back in my face. Just all too real. They covered the Democratic convention. And they'll be covering the Republican convention in the same manner. But they went to all these hoity-toity parties that were held by the corporations for the upper crust of the Democratic Party. And Nancy Pelosi, anybody know Nancy Pelosi? I'll see her in January, and when I do, I'll tell you what, I will not mince words with her about what I saw on TV last night. I was ashamed. Not that I didn't know it goes on, but it was tough seeing it. All these big corporations whining and dining these people like kings and queens, and you know very well why. It wasn't to say, "Oh, I like you and you're my friend." It was to buy influence. And make no mistake about it, just because I'm a Democrat, I'm not blind to the fact that Democrats can be bought as well. And I'm not saying, oh, here's $100,000, go vote the way I want to. You know, it's very, very cynical. Just keeps weaving into your mind when people invite you to golf outings in Fiji, and when they throw a $1 million party for you, and you're the honoree. I bet you the next time they knock on your door, I'll just bet. I could be wrong, but I'll bet the next time they knock on your door, you're gonna say, "Well, come right on in." Yeah, absolutely, because we're all taught to be nice to those who are kind to us, and oh my. These big corporations are mighty kind to our politicians, and I don't care, you know, any of my Democratic leadership friends, if you're listening, I don't care. It was my party doing it last night, and it stinks. It absolutely stinks, and if you were involved in any of that, you should be ashamed. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. Shameful. Absolutely shameful. I hate it, and boy, I really hated watching that last night. We got Dave in California. Dave, welcome to the show.
Oh, Guy, I'm so happy that I've tracked you down. I love your ability to address reality, and I think that's a quality that is more common among us Democrats, to be able to look at and see what's there and assess the faults that are on our own. And I listen to talk radio all over the place, and I do find that to be a quality sorely lacking in the Republicans. It's like they've sat on drugs in front of Fox TV and been blinded. You know, this Republican Party, as you see it right now, has absolutely nothing going for them that they have done on behalf of the average citizen. If you get callers that can say, this is what this administration has done for me, the working man, it will be a first if I hear that. They... But we can see the faults that we have. And, you know, if ever Kerry attempted to be anywhere near as corrupt as this administration, he would have Democrats all over him.
Well, absolutely, Dave. You know, all you have to do, logically, is take a look at the Democratic Party and to say that we're not fair and we don't look at our own problems and bring them up and argue about them. Where the hell did Ralph Nader come from? I mean, Ralph Nader is alive politically only because Democrats... of all ilk are willing to take a look at their party, warts and all, and try and sort it all out. Is anybody trying to split off from the Republican Party? I don't think so.
God, I love Nader, and I wish he and the Kucinich and Sharpton and all would just jump right in and try to clean up what is wrong with our Democratic Party. But it's going... I mean, listen to our convention there. Clinton, with all his faults, he was able to spell out a dozen things that he had done. He had paid off a deficit. He had left us with a surplus. Crime was down. He had education up. He had wages up. Unemployment down. He had all that happening. Everything has been reversed on this administration, and they say, we inherited this problem from Clinton.
Yeah.
They cannot see reality.
Some problem to inherit. You know, you're right, Dave. No matter what happens in the Republican Party, they're gonna gloss over it, and it's okay. They'll cover it up and bury it like a dog does a bone, and just pretend the warts don't exist.
What is it? Is it generations of inbreeding, or what in the hell? Why?
I don't know. I wish I could explain it. I've studied long and hard on the situation. I really have, and I've never come up with what I think is a really great explanation of it. I do wish I knew. I certainly do.
I'm sure Limbaugh and Hannity and Fox News have some part in it, but they must be able to see through that every once in a while. You'd think they could.
Well, you know, it's the big lie theory that coming from Goebbels and his people during the war. First of all, boil the problem down to black and white. Don't have it be have any nuances at all. Make everything black and white, and then say it over and over and over again. And sooner or later, you'll get to them. And when the Fairness Doctrine took a dive, and I think it was 1988, well, that was the end of fairness as we know. And until it's reinstated, we're never going to have fairness again on the airwaves. And you're right, the airwaves are they're very responsible for a lot of what's going on right now.
Thank you so much, Guy. Republicans, try to think for yourself, and once you do that, I think you'll find yourself bailing out of your party through the nearest window.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. Well, let's see. We're expecting a call pretty soon now from Roger Altman. He'll be calling us any moment now. And in the meantime, let me see. I'll take one more call right here. Hope we don't have to cut this call. We got Julio on the line. Julio, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guy? I want to talk about the slow news week this week. This is just if I can remember since last Saturday.
Okay. Hey, Julio. Go right ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. There's a report came out, independent report this week, saying that Rumsfeld had knowledge or something to do with what happened in Abu Ghraib. Okay, there were two terrorist attacks in Russia using suicide bombers on airplanes. They have the Iraq war, Afghan war. Poverty is going up by a census report. Healthcare, people with healthcare is going down. People making less money, that was written by the IRS. Less people working. Greenspan says Social Security is in trouble. $500 billion deficit. An Israeli spy inside the Pentagon. Overtime was reformed. 97 dogs, number 11th, them have cancer because of the contaminated air. Okay, a Hollywood man sets himself on fire because his son died in Iraq when they come and told him. And the most important thing that our liberal media could discuss this entire week is whether or not John Kerry was in Cambodia on Christmas.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It was a huge news week, and you're exactly right. I was shocked when I heard it. Julio, I'm going to have to cut it short this week. I have our interviewee on the line, and I hope you'll forgive me, but we'll talk to you again very soon. And by the way, Julio, please leave your phone number with Biz. We need your number. We need to talk to you about something. Right now we have on the line a gentleman I've been looking forward to talking to, a gentleman that's known and respected in the political world and the economic world, Mr. Roger Altman, the former Deputy Treasury Secretary during the Clinton administration, is with us, and he's now a key advisor, economic advisor to the Kerry campaign. Mr. Altman, are you with us?
I am, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, glad to have you with us today. You've got a lot to talk about, and we plan on dedicating quite a bit of the show today to the economic matters, some of the nuts and bolts of it that a lot of people find I don't know why they find it dull, because it impacts every last one of us. But how's the economic program going for the Kerry campaign right now? We've got it all solidified in what we're going to go out and sell?
Well, let me try to address this point you just made about the extent to which people are interested in this or should be interested in this. I think one could put the whole thing pretty simply. Most American elections, at least in the modern era, are decided on the so-called kitchen table issues, the types of things that American households talk about in terms of how government affects their daily lives. Are their incomes down or up? Is it easier or harder for them to make ends meet? Those issues. And in this election, the choice really is between night and day, because under Mr. Bush, and the facts are just unarguable, jobs are down. He's guaranteed now to be the first president since Herbert Hoover 70 years ago to see jobs decline over a four-year term. Incomes are down. The Census Department reported last Thursday that the average family has seen its income fall $1,500 since he took office. That compares to $7,200 over 8 years that it grew when President Clinton was in office. And I could go on, but on the twin gut issues here, jobs and incomes, and most fundamentally, whether standards of living in this country are going up or going down, the record is profoundly negative under Mr. Bush. Jobs are down, not up. Incomes are down and not up. And there's nothing that affects the daily lives of Americans more basically than those two issues, jobs and income. So I hope over the next 2 months, between now and Election Day, that much of the country and most of your listeners will pay some attention to those, because there's nothing more basic than they are.
But, you know, the thing that amazes me, Roger, is middle America, I like to call them Joe Sixpack out there, I have a hard time understanding why they don't really grasp on to those issues and don't understand that the hierarchy and the Republican Party really doesn't give a damn about their economic success. They make them think they do, but they never do anything for them.
Well, the Bush administration isn't very good at governing, but it's pretty good at negative politics.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it's very good at that. And so their tactic on all the economic issues, and I mean all domestic issues, from health care to education to jobs and income and so on, is to change the subject. and you hear the president say, day in and day out, that he's a wartime president, that the issue that counts is the war on terror, and no one belittles that. No one thinks that's unimportant. It's very important, but he uses that as a way to deflect all other issues. So this week at the Republican convention, you're not going to hear them talk about their record on the economy. You won't hear five words on that. You'll hear them talk about how they're going to do better in the future, and President Bush saying we've, quote, turned the corner. But you won't hear them talk about their economic record, because on jobs and on incomes, believe it or not, it's the worst since Herbert Hoover.
Well, I've said for a long time on this program that the people most grateful for a George Bush administration is the survivors and the kin of Herbert Hoover, because from now on, they won't be comparing everybody to him. They'll be comparing him to George W. Bush.
But, you know, this is an awfully important election. It's important because the competing visions which these two candidates offer, Kerry on the one hand, Bush on the other, are so starkly different. And I like to try to say that the choice is whether we want to return to the principles which we followed in this country during the 1990s, which led to such prosperity for all Americans, from our poorest citizens to our wealthiest, and led to such stability around the world. Or whether we want to stick with the Bush principles, which are entirely different than the ones of the 90s in every single case, and which by any historical sense are radical. They're not conservative, they're radical. There's nothing conservative about gigantic budget deficits, and there's nothing conservative about the preemptive military strategy which they've employed. And it's useful to recount what those principles were that we followed in the 90s. They're really not democratic principles. They're just centrist common sense principles. They were, number one, sound budgeting. Number two, on tax policy, a concentration on middle-income Americans, not the wealthiest. Number three, a real priority on health care, and I think Kerry can accomplish more than Clinton did there. Number four, really stepping up on funding for education. Bush talks a lot about it, puts no money behind it. And number five, stable American relations in the world community, which, among other things, affects oil prices and what every American pays for gasoline. Those are the principles we followed during the 1990s. You can see they're very simple. They're very common-sense ones. They're not Democratic versus Republican. But if you think about what Bush has done, on budgeting, biggest deficits in American history. On tax policy, skewed dramatically toward the wealthy. On health care, no serious proposal. He talks about health security accounts and those things. Even his supporters think they might cover only 4 million of the 45 million Americans who don't have health care coverage. And with health care inflation, four times the rate of inflation in the rest of our society. Education, he talked a good game, no child left behind, no money in there. And, of course, American relations around the world have never been less stable. So I think the choice is fundamental. Do we want to return to those common sense policies we followed in the 90s with such success, and by the way, very recently, or do we want to stick with these radical policies? And I hope, as I say, over the next 60-odd days between now and election day, that these will come into clearer focus in the minds of the American voter.
What does it look like? Are we going to get any debates where we can really, really, you know, do a significant job of talking about this back and forth? What is the status of that right now? Do you know?
Well, yes, I do. There's a National Commission on Debates. It's a bipartisan group, and it has proposed three presidential debates and one vice presidential debate. And by the way, the first presidential debate would be in Florida, your state, on September the 30th. It would be in Miami. Senator Kerry has accepted the proposal and has said we'll do those three presidential debates and we'll do the first vice presidential. We'll do the vice presidential debate. Mr. Bush has said, I'm not going to deal with that until the convention is over. Parenthetically, I don't think that's unfair. I mean, you know,
right.
It's pretty reasonable to say, well, why don't I deal with that once I'm really nominated? I think the only question here is whether we'll have three presidential debates or two. It wouldn't surprise me for Bush to say, I'll do just two. And there's some historical precedent on that. I mean, President Clinton did just two against Dole in 1996. So even though the commission has proposed three, I think there'll be either three or two. And ultimately, it will be decided on what Bush agrees to do. But in any event, the first one is almost certainly going to be September 30th in Miami. I believe the second one is October 15th in St. Louis at the presidential level. So we'll see at least two of them.
Well, Bush ought to be right at home in Miami. He's been there a lot lately, working for Mel Martinez.
President Bush obviously feels he can't win this election without winning Florida.
Sure.
And I you know, you tell me. Is he going to win Florida?
No, absolutely not. I tell you, I live where we live here, as you probably know, is as hardcore Republican as it can get anywhere over on the southwest coast of Florida. But all the signs I've seen, all the Republican clubs around the state that I'm constantly in contact with, point to me that an energy that I've never seen before. And
Karl Rove, you know, Bush's political Svengali, was quoted in today's Washington Post as saying that he thought they were even up or 2 points up in Florida right now.
I just can't believe that. I really can't.
What are the respected statewide polls show?
Well, right now they show him just about a dead heat. I will admit that Bush has caught up a couple of points here lately, but they're all within the margin of error. So, you know, neither side could say it's going to be a runaway. It's going to be close again. It's going to be very, very close again, I'm sure. But I just think that this time the Democrats have worked so hard in getting out the vote here in Florida that we will prevail. We've got a great senatorial campaign going on that's going to bring more people out this time. And I just think the Democrats are probably a leg up right now in getting people out. I don't know.
Well, everybody is focused on Florida, given the events of 2000 in that state. And, of course, the recent devastation of Hurricane Charlie. And general importance of Florida, and I think in the end it'll be a fairly simple question that the voters will answer, and that question will be, in the simplest terms, do Floridians want more of the Bush record on jobs and incomes and deficits and the American relationship in the world community, or do they want to change?
So
if they want to change, they'll support Senator Kerry, and if they want more of the same, then they'll give Mr. Bush another term. And if they want more of the same, they should give him another term.
Well, I know quite a few people aren't willing to do that. Roger, if you had to answer the question right now, if somebody said to you, tell me in black and white terms, the main difference between Mr. Kerry's economic plans for this country and Mr. Bush's economic plans for this country, how would you do that?
I would say, in the simplest terms, It relates to who you care about. What sector of America do you care about? Mr. Bush, I mean, the hallmark of his presidency, by his own admission, he says it every day, are the three gigantic tax cuts he's put forward. We know from the Congressional Budget Office, which is headed by a Republican, which is a nonpartisan office, which reported 10 days ago, that the effect of those tax cuts was to increase the share of total taxes being paid by middle-income Americans by quite a bit. In other words, before he came into office, middle-income Americans were paying XYZ percent share of all taxes paid in this country. Now they're paying more. And, of course, the wealthiest Americans are paying less. That's been the primary effect of those tax cuts. And it symbolizes, in the simplest, most vivid way, what his priorities are. So the difference between Kerry and Bush, and I could go into great detail on Kerry's jobs program, his fiscal program, his trade program, his health care program, his education program, if we had more time. But fundamentally, the choice is which sector of America is each candidate going to emphasize? Bush is going to emphasize, if he has another term, the wealthiest Americans. In fact, he's talked now about, right out of his own mouth, a national sales tax. He's talking about further tax changes in his next term, a national sales tax, as a way of replacing a lot of the income tax. A national sales tax is one where you and I and everybody else would pay a fixed amount on all goods and services we buy. Today, you know, we pay a sales tax on things like gasoline and cigarettes and liquor and things like that. And depending on the state you live in, I don't know the details of Florida's sales tax structure, you may pay it on most things you would buy, you know, at any kind of department store, for example. Under Bush's idea, you'd pay a sales tax on everything you bought. And that would be the primary source of revenue for the federal government. So whether you earned $1 million a year or $10,000 a year, you pay the same tax on the goods and services you bought. That is the most profoundly regressive idea one could think of if you had 10 years to think of something. That's what he's talking about for his next term.
Right.
So it's about who's on the side of the working families in this country. Is it Bush or is it Kerry? And just look what they've done and look what they're saying.
And the working families of America better remember that it is them that elect the President of the United States, and they better take that to heart. Mr. Altman, we're so grateful to have had you with us today. Good to hear from you, and we wish you all the good luck in the world with the Kerry campaign. It's going to be hard fought from here on out. I know you're going to be very busy. And
there's no doubt that Florida will again play a pivotal role, maybe the pivotal role, on November the 2nd.
Well, here in Ohio, it looks to me.
And the eyes of the country, well, it's hard to say, but the eyes of the world, really, not just the United States, are going to be on Florida, maybe on Ohio, too. But nothing could be more important than trying to explain and express these choices to the citizens of Fort Myers and all of Florida.
Well, we'll continue to do our part doing that, and we thank you so much for helping us out this week.
My pleasure, anytime.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Altman, Deputy Treasury Secretary during the Clinton administration, we really, really appreciate having him with us today. We're going to take a break right now. I guess we haven't had a break since the show started. I get a little long-winded here. So you're listening to The Guy James Show. We'll be right back after these words.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James.
We are people of all ages, from different walks of life. We have hopes and dreams, but live in a reality filled with pain. We are the family and friends of alcoholics. We struggle to keep the peace, to make things right. But our lives are not our own. They are controlled by someone else's drinking. We may be different, but we have one thing in common. We want our lives back. If you need help, call Al-Anon and Alateen at 1-888-4-Al-Anon or visit our website at www.alanon.alateen.org. To help them, you have to help yourself first.
Attention, parents of America. A message from the American Optometric Association.
Parents, do you love your kids?
Yes!
Would you do anything for them?
Well,
if it were important to their health and well-being?
Yes!
Really?
Yes!
Then make sure to have your child's eyes examined by an optometrist at least every 2 years. And why?
Because we love our kids!
Because you love your kids.
A Democrat can win the seat in Congress from Southwest Florida. Unlike Republicans, this Democrat stands for equal opportunity, family-supporting jobs, better public schools, and a cleaner environment, not with special interest. Who is this Democrat?
I'm Robert Neal. I'd be honored to earn your support.
To learn more about Robert Neal, visit robertnealforcongress.com, authorized by Robert Neal for Congress Committee, Gerald Levy, Treasurer.
Heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Back with you. It was good to hear from Roger Altman, as you well know. Man's a genius when it comes to economic matters. Take a look at all the great economic news that came out of the Clinton administration. There's a man right there that was behind some of it. So always keep that in mind when you listen to Roger Altman. Brilliant, brilliant man. Hey, I know a lot of you have heard what I'm about to play. Some of you haven't. But I'd like you to hear from, we've heard all this stuff coming out of the Bush campaign over the years about his National Guard duty and all that, and people have accused him of getting appointed over the top of everybody else that was in line to get in that champagne unit down in Texas. Listen to this. Well, I'm getting nothing. Okay. Well, we'll check it a little later. Don't know why. Don't know why that is. I don't think I hit the wrong button. Anyway, we got the tape from doggone it. I hate it when that happens. We got the tape from Texas Lieutenant Governor Barnes, and telling about he personally put George W. Bush in the National Guard over top of everybody else and how he feels so bad about it right now. Going to go to Bill in Fort Myers. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. I really enjoyed that interview. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
I
there's something that you know that I wish you would stress a little bit more, because I don't think that people realize what kind of a propaganda machine the Republicans have and how well-financed it is and how smooth it is.
Best there ever was.
You know, how can you convince people that it's a good idea to have two Americas, one for the top 25% and another one for the bottom 75% of expendable peons? Who in their right mind would believe anything like that? And we're now starting to believe it because of that propaganda machine.
Well, you make them think, you make the underlings think that they're going to get theirs too.
Oh.
That's what you do. You say, you know, those dirty welfare people been stealing all your money from you folks, and I'm going to put a stop to it, and then you'll have yours too. And you know that dirty government that's been taking all your tax money? I'm going to help you out, and then you'll have yours too, and you'll be rich like me.
And we all know that the Republicans fought tooth and nail to destroy Social Security before it even got started back in the 1930s. They've been against it every day. And if the Bush administration keeps it up, they're already letting everybody know that they're not going to get anything like their parents got. And they will destroy it if they get a chance.
Absolutely.
But as far as being smooth, I just found out that the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., their Capitol building, or headquarters building, has radio studios, television studios. And guess where Laura Ingraham broadcasts from? Right out of the Heritage Foundation.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
And you know, Guy, you every broadcast you tell us where you're broadcasting from. Maybe you're not you're out in the open. Why does Laura Ingraham never say where she's broadcasting from? Is she ashamed of it? Or
I did not know that. In the Heritage Foundation, my God, that's in the bowels of the beast right there.
And you Republicans listening to her show, just strain your ears to have her announce where it's coming from, because you're not going to hear it.
Man, oh man.
The other thing is that the right wing is putting out now that they never accused anybody of being unpatriotic if they were not in lockstep with this administration, which is an out-and-out lie.
Really now?
And just this week, Neil Bortz said that this country is being undermined by a group of people, and that group of people, it was almost like he was going to say, it's the Jews, if you'll excuse me. But he said the group of people undermining this country is anybody that would vote for Senator Kerry. So who's telling the truth, Neil Bortz or these other Republicans?
Well, Bortz's opinion, in my opinion, are worthless.
Going to John Kerry, you know, he served two terms in Vietnam, one 6 months offshore and one 4 months in country, and people say, well, it's all safe offshore. Oh, really? The Pentagon decides what a war zone is, and unlike the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, where we were the only superpower, in Vietnam there was a thing called the Soviet Union that had a very capable Navy, and our people offshore were under risk just like the people in Vietnam. So let's don't just write it off and say, oh, he was under no danger out there, because that's not our decision, that's the decision of the Pentagon.
You're exactly right. I agree.
And in closing, I would like to say that thank you for the leadership that the Democrats are hungry for. You're providing it during the weekend. And I understand that our local talk has been too much of a pain in the neck to the powers that be. And if the people of Southwest Florida don't stand up, by Christmas there will be no local talk radio during the week. And I'm asking the other people that like talk radio, if you don't stand up now and demand we keep what we've had for 15 years, then we really don't even deserve it.
Wow. Here, well, I couldn't agree more, Bill.
Thanks so much, Guy.
Thank you. I got a great email from a gentleman. Many of you remember, I hope I have time for this. Many of you remember last week we had a gentleman call in and talk about, people were calling in talking about John Kerry's war record, which I think we all know by now. That the Swift Boat group is nothing but a bunch of liars and pretenders. I mean, I think that's been proven over and over and over again. If I were most of those guys, I wouldn't have the nerve to show my face ever again. They've gone on talk shows, and I'll give them credit for one thing. They've been loyal to a fault. They were told to go out and spread this crap, and they did it. They did it regardless of the circumstances. I've seen them on radio and TV shows get their hides nailed to the wall and be made to look absolutely incredibly stupid and dishonest. And yet they kept right on with it. So I'll give them credit. They had a mission. They went right after it. But we were talking about them disparaging Senator Kerry's record last week, and I'd like to read you this email I have here. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's important. It's from Jim in Marco Island, Florida. And Jim, I thank you very much for this. It says, Dear Guy, I'm an Army Vietnam veteran commissioned in 1967 with 2+ years prior enlisted service. I arrived in Republic of Vietnam on January 29, 1968, which was the kickoff for the Tet Offensive, and was overrun by VC sappers at the replacement battalion on day two. I served in a staff position and then as a company commander. I was evacuated for surgery 2 months before my tour would have been completed and was subsequently awarded the Bronze Star. I went on to work 20+ years as a civilian scientist in the Army, including the U.S. Army Institute for the Behavioral and Social Sciences in the field of organizational leadership. Fact, during the Vietnam years, it was Department of Defense policy to, quote, bloody young officers by rotating them through combat assignments of 6 months duration. It was also policy to rotate anyone who was wounded 3 times. So John Kerry's early out after 4.5 months in swift boats was a matter of policy, not some dire conspiracy. Had he not been wounded the 3rd time, he still would have been out in another month and a half. Fact, military awards, whether for meritorious service or valor, are not your run-of-the-mill employee of the month honors. There are explicit regulations complete with examples of what actions deserve what award. There are review boards and supporting statements of witnesses are required. Then a final review and approval by the highest ranking officer of the command with a specific authority to approve that level of award is required. Awards are routinely denied or downgraded by this process. Whatever John Kerry received was vetted in the extreme, and only the most dishonorable distorters of fact could change that other, could change charge otherwise. Fact, true officers hold solemn their oath of duty, honor, and country. If any of John Kerry's commanders now say he sent forward a recommendation for award that was false, he, the commander, is the dishonest one. All awards recommended above those commanders' signatures must now be considered questionable, and the commanders are guilty of the grossest dishonor to their commissions, the country, and the men who served under them. Kerry earned his rewards. His testimony before Congress angered many. Some of those have been corrupted by their anger and now have made a deal with the devil and are doing the devil's work in the name of truth. If George W. Bush cannot specifically condemn these lies and distortion, as has Senator McCain, then George W. Bush does not deserve the title of Commander-in-Chief. Jim from Marco Island, Florida. Jim, thank you very much for that. It explains a lot. It adds credence to what we've been saying here. I got another letter from him. I might read a little later on in the program. But how many of you saw that picture of George W. Bush with his wings that he earned, and then a couple of little medals he had on his military jacket there? Well, Walt Starr went out and did a little investigation and found that Mr. Bush, his outfit, neither his outfit nor he ever earned these medals that he had on in his official National Guard photograph. My. Don't we find that a little bit interesting? And we'll talk about that a little later in the program today. We've got a lot coming up today. For those of you on Democratic Underground, we've got Mary 333 is going to be with us around 4:10. And we've got a delightful lady by the name of Helen Boucher, a top economist, that's going to be with us a little later on, too. We're going to talk a lot more. But so much in the news this week, it was really hard to keep up with it. But here we go again. We had the new jobless claims last week going up. Jobless claims, folks. That's not jobs going up. That's 343,000 new jobless claims last week. It's going up. And, like we said, we heard there's a war still going on over in Iraq, but you wouldn't know it by the actions of the liberal media. And how about our good friend Ben Ginsburg? You know, when I saw his face come on the TV this week, I just had to cringe a little bit because I hadn't seen his mug since the theft of the Oval Office. And he was one of the most complicit ones in that whole mess. Ben Ginsburg, the head dog lawyer for the Bush administration, having to resign. Oh, my. He had to resign because he was working in the toilet with those Swift Boat Veterans guys. And he says, with a straight face, I love it. He said with a straight face, and I don't know how many of you saw this, with a straight face he says, oh, no, I didn't tell, neither one of them knew I was working with the other. No, they didn't know that. Like the Swift Boat Veterans didn't know that he was Bush's lawyer? Really? And Bush didn't know that he was working with the Swift Boat guys? Really? Well, I'll tell you, this guy's a better liar with a straight face than anybody I think I've ever seen. And then we had the report come out that said, gee whiz, guess what? It actually was torture at Abu Ghraib prison. Ah, really? This came from the hierarchy of the Army. It actually was torture there. Wasn't these fraternity pranks that the drug-crazed Rush Limbaugh said it was. Just a little harmless prank going on over there. So we've got a lot to talk about the rest of the show. A huge amount of news this past week, and I know you'll want to discuss it. 888-602-7500, 7850102030304, and we'll be back with you after the news at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Guy James Show, WPTK, Power Talk 1200, Fort Myers, Florida.
The Guy James Show. Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
The weekend before the Republican National Convention in New York, and how are things in the Big Apple? I'm Dave Schreiber, and two Brooklyn men are under arrest, accused of plotting to blow up a New York City subway stop that is near Madison Square Garden. The convention is being held. The men face federal conspiracy charges. They're set to be arraigned today. ABC's Rich Esposito has more on the accused terror sympathizers and their alleged plot.
Very often, people who are sympathizers with terrorist groups take it on their own to act and make a statement of their own. And this is something that's happened before in New York when two Mideastern men were arrested several years ago with a bomb-making operation. They had no known ties to terrorists, but they had a room full of pipe bombs that they intended to explode on the subway.
New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly.
It was clear that they had an intention to cause damage, to kill people. They did not immediately have the means to do it.
There was a protest on the Brooklyn Bridge today. Those protesters have now moved to Manhattan and New York's City Hall. The protest is in support of reproductive rights. The FBI continues its investigation into whether a high-level analyst at the Pentagon was feeding secret material to Israel. There's been reaction in Israel. More from ABC's Tom Gager in Washington.
Denials went all the way to the top when Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's office issued a statement saying his country had no connection to the matter. The statement said, Israel does not engage in intelligence activities in the United States. We deny all these reports. U.S. officials refused to identify the suspect, but said he works in the office of Douglas J. Faith at the Pentagon, a senior official with close ties to Israel.
ABC's Tom Gager in Washington. In his weekly radio address, President Bush said the sweeping changes he called for in the nation's intelligence communities are more proof his administration is doing all it can to fight terrorism. This is ABC News.
Squeezing all the tomatoes into your diet that research suggests you eat to reduce your risk of cancer can be a challenge.
Tomatoes for breakfast?
So we've squeezed all the good stuff from the tomato into Lycomato.
Tomato muffins.
Lycomato, the power of five whole tomatoes in one little pill. With lycopene and all the other antioxidants found naturally in the tomato.
For dessert, tomato pudding.
Oh.
Yummy.
The power of five tomatoes in one little pill. Lycomato, in the lycopene section of your local health food store.
Get to Goodyear's Pit Stop Tire Sale, now through August 28th, and save on Goodyear tires. Plus, buy four selected Goodyear tires and get up to a $75 cash card. For everyday low prices and up to a $75 cash card, call 1-800-GOODYEAR for complete details. Stop and get your Goodyears today. And race in to check out Goodyear's new Assurance brand of passenger tires. Mail-in cash card offer ends August 28th.
Campaign 2004. There are important decisions to be made, but one choice is clear. For complete and immediate election coverage, trust Link News. On Tuesday, get a unique first look at primary election results as they happen. Special coverage begins Tuesday at 5 and continues throughout the night until the last vote is counted. At 9, join Link News for the Campaign 2004 Election Special, a complete wrap-up of all primary results. Depend on Link News, Southwest Florida's news leader.
There are many choices you make, so thank you for choosing Wink as the best in Southwest Florida. In a recent News Press Readers poll, Wink TV was awarded Best TV Station. Wink News anchors Jim McLaughlin and Lois Tomey, Best News Team. Chief Meteorologist Jim Farrell also honored in the Best of Southwest Florida poll. And Wink's Brian Simon voted Best Sportscaster. So what makes Wink the best? Just watch Wink News and find out. Wink News, Southwest Florida's news leader.
Hi, this is Doug Gallagher. I'm running for the U.S. Senate, and I approve this message.
The United States Senate race has come down to three men, McCollum, Martinez, or Gallagher. But only a vote for Doug Gallagher brings the chance for major historic change. Doug's a fresh face. He's not part of the system. He's a successful businessman who knows how to get things done. When his brother died young of diabetes, he helped raise more than $80 million for research, and today, a cure is within sight. He can do the same for America. He'll lead the charge to throw out the IRS and replace it with a simple, fair flat tax. Doug Gallagher never asks how to merely improve America. He wants to see how great we can make it. Vote Doug Gallagher for Senate on Tuesday. Paid for by Gallagher for Senate, Inc.
Collier County's Solid Waste Department reminds you to stack Hurricane Charlie-related yard waste curbside for pickup by Sunday, August 29th. For more information, call 403-2380.
He stands for better public schools, equal opportunity, and a cleaner environment. He'll vote to wipe out a federal deficit that weakens America for our children and grandchildren. He'll defend Social Security and Medicare. His name, Robert Neal, Democrat, candidate for the United States Congress.
I'm Robert Neal, and I'd be honored to earn your support.
To learn more, visit RobertNealForCongress.com, authorized by Robert Neal for Congress Committee, Gerald Levy, Treasurer.
If knowledge is power, then Power Talk 1200 is your source for news and information, plus today's most powerful talk program. Now, Power Talk 1200 brings you the resources of ABC News at the top of every hour, plus the recognized name in business with the CNBC report throughout your workday at 30 minutes past the hour. ABC News and CNBC Business Report. Knowledge is power. Power Talk 1200, WPTK.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
So glad to be with you this afternoon. Coming to you here from beautiful Fort Myers, Florida. You are listening to the Guy James Show, where we try to speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth every week. We're glad to have you along with us. Many of us on the many with us today on the internet. Glad to see that. All of our friends out there in Democratic Underground and so forth. Would like to invite you to take a good look at our website, www.theguyjamesshow.com. Always glad to have you visit on there, and you can take a look, rumble around in there for a while and see what you can find. We're going to have some more changes coming up on there very shortly. But again, that's www.theguyjamesshow.com. Let's go to, oh, by the way, the phone's 888-602-7500, 7501, 0203, and 04, or locally, 479-5540. Glad to hear from you. We've got Scott's on the phone in Punta Gorda. Scott's welcome.
Well, thank you. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Joseph McCarthy.
Okay.
You know, that guy has gotten such a bad name from the people that, I don't know what's happened. I think it's probably the liberal press. The only
Let me stop you right there, Scott.
Huh?
What liberal press are you talking about?
Well, the liberal press that's been after him for all of these years. The only people
who is
he
this
ever...
liberal press?
Pardon me?
Who is this liberal press?
Well, I would say ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times, The Washington Post.
And what proof do you have of that?
When we're talking about liberal and when we're talking about conservative, what we're talking about is a person's opinion. That's all it can be. How can you prove that they're conservative? You know, you can't any more than I can prove that.
No, I don't think they're either. I think they're pretty straight down the road. They have stories that make me mad as a liberal, and they have stories that make conservatives mad. There's no liberal media in those people you mentioned.
Oh no, not at all.
None.
No, not at all. They're all for being conservative and being for the Constitution and all that, and unless of course it's for socialism. Then they're for that. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about what Joseph McCarthy went after.
Well, surely you're not going to defend
Joseph.
You're not going to defend Joseph McCarthy to me, are you? I hope you're not going to do that.
Well, I'm not if you're going to keep interrupting me, no.
Well, it is my show, Scotch, and I'll ask
the
question.
Well, I realize that, but I thought you were more open-minded than
I am. I am open-minded, but I happen to know quite a little bit about Joe McCarthy.
I don't think you do. That's why I wanted to get my two cents.
All right,
so
you're going to go right ahead and tell us what a good guy Joe McCarthy was.
The only people that he really investigated were people that worked for the government. He wanted to keep the communists out of the government and out of the State Department. He wanted to keep them out of the overseas libraries, the government printing office, the Army Signal Corps. And this is from the guy who actually did the editing of the transcripts, and he didn't even like McCarthy. There was nobody that McCarthy ever had arrested without due process. Some of the people that he did attack, I will admit, were people like Oppenheimer and people like Lattimore, Stewart, and people like Jessup, and they were all proven to be communists.
How about the Hollywood blacklist?
The only thing that those people came up for, those people were witnesses, period.
And look at the lives that were ruined on account of that.
They weren't ruined. Those guys had jobs. All they did was change their names.
Oh, there was people.
And they changed their names, and not only that, some of the people said, look, if you weren't liberal, you didn't work in Hollywood. How many conservative people we got in there now? By the way, you know who...
I think Ronald Reagan did okay for himself. I think
Ronald Reagan did fine for himself while he was a Democrat.
He didn't change from liberal to conservative. He was always conservative. How about the governor out there now?
The governor?
Yeah.
He's a liberal as you come right now. I mean, he wouldn't have married a conservative, would he? He married a Kennedy. Are the Kennedys considered conservative?
I wasn't talking about his wife.
I know many mixed couples. Doggone good and well. He's as liberal as she is. They're the best of friends. And besides that, here we go again. The only thing we're talking about is what happened 30 years ago in Vietnam. There's no policies. We're not even talking about what they're going to do when they get into office.
And whose fault is that right now?
We're arguing about who lied about who back 30 years ago. I don't care what happened.
Now, whose fault is that right now? Who brought this up?
I'm sure that the Republicans did, but the Republicans, like I've told you before, are as liberal as the Democrats.
And do you think the so-called liberal media brought this this attack on Kerry to the fore here, and that's all you've heard for several weeks now? Do you think it was the liberal media that brought that story forth?
No, I think it was the liberal Republicans that brought that forth, because possibly they'll lose a little bit of government money once they get in there, because the government money will go to the liberal Democrats. But would you please tell me the difference between the two, what one's going to do and one's not going to do? One's going to be in favor of killing babies. The other one says, well, I'm kind of against that.
And you know, I have never heard a candidate come out and say he was in favor of killing babies.
Pro-choice.
You guys have had a lot of fun with that issue over the years. Huh?
They just use different terms, but it's the same thing, pro-choice, pro-death.
How come they don't change it right now when they have a chance to?
Well, because people would probably get smart and realize what was going on. Most of the American people don't know what the world you're talking
about.
That's been
a big issue with the conservatives for a lot of years, and right now they've got the perfect opportunity to change it. Why don't they?
They haven't had a conservative in the White House in 50. No, more than that. It's been almost 100 years that they had a conservative in there. The last real good conservative. conservative was William Howard Taft.
Well, Scotts, who are you for then?
Not for either one of these guys.
Well, who's conservative enough for you then?
I thought at one time Pat Buchanan was, but he's getting a little bit too liberal for me now. Oh. Barry Goldwater was one of them that I happened to like a long time ago, but I saw what happened to him. They kind of destroyed that old boy, but he was a good patriot. I will say that.
So there's nobody
that... Your good old liberal Johnson got us involved more and more into that Gulf of Tonkin war over there.
Absolutely.
And killed more and more of our boys, put us deeper and deeper in debt, and then he had that great war on poverty, which put us deeper in debt.
And boy, any time the government tries to help out anybody that needs a little help, that's really a bad thing.
Well, don't... Whatever you do, don't consider yourself a Jeffersonian Democrat when you're all for government helping people out, because that was strictly Hamiltonian.
I'm a Wellstone Democrat. That's exactly what I would call myself.
A Wellstone Democrat.
Absolutely. A Paul Wellstone Democrat. If I'm going to be identified as a certain type of Democrat, call me a Wellstone Democrat any day of the week, and I know how Paul Wellstone felt about all that.
He wasn't a Democrat. He was a socialist.
Oh, well, here you
go.
Well, there you go again.
I mean, that's what...
There's nobody that's going to satisfy you, Scotch. I really don't know what your ideology is. In other words, there's nobody ever conservative enough for you, and that scares me.
Why? Would Thomas Jefferson scare you? Would George Washington scare you? Would Madison scare you? I guess they would.
They were far more liberal, willing to romp right through and get the job done forming a new nation. If we'd have left this up to conservatives in those days, we'd still be part of England.
Well, they
certainly are considered conservatives now. Well, if we'd have left it to the conservatives in those days, we would still be part of good old jolly England. Got to move on, Scotch. Thank you for calling today. Well, I don't know. I don't know how conservative you'd have to be. I really don't. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. You're welcome to give us a call, 479-5540, 479-5540, if you want to call locally. Biz is going to be getting somebody on the phone here for me in just a moment or two. I gave Biz a list of people to call before the show, and she's going to get me one of them right now. Okay, she's working on it. How about Bob Dole this week? How about old Bob Dole? You know, his reputation with me went straight down the drain. Bob Dole was a war hero. I give him every bit of that. Every bit of it. He deserves it all. And thank God for guys like Bob Dole going to war and doing their job and doing it well. But what else does Bob Dole owe his political career to besides that? And he comes on the air this week and criticizes John Kerry. I was absolutely shocked. Shocked that Bob Dole, of all people, would do that. That hurt my feelings. It did. I always kind of liked Bob Dole. Not anymore. He proved that he's a rat just like the rest of those lying swift boat cowards. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know whether he just snapped or what, because off camera to Wolf Blitzer, he admitted that this was wrong off camera, and they do have a recording of it. And then, you know, we've got the Mr. John O'Neill ahead of this whole thing. How many of you saw him saying that, proclaiming that Kerry was never in Cambodia and made a huge deal that none of us were in Cambodia, none of us were ever in Cambodia. I know that John Kerry's a liar because none of us were ever in Cambodia. Then did you hear the recording of him with Richard Nixon? Oh, John O'Neill and Richard Nixon, and O'Neill telling Richard Nixon that he was in Cambodia? Man, you know, and still the guy goes right on like, okay, you caught me in that big lie, let me tell you another one. Pretty amazing, I think. Right now, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Marianne on the line. Marianne, welcome to the show. I think we've got a pretty terrible connection here somehow. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, welcome to the show, Marianne. For those of you that don't know, Marianne lost her husband this week, and a lot of our friends on the Internet know that, and... we wanted to have her on the show today to talk to us for a minute. Are you there?
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of background noise of some kind.
I know. I'm trying to find a place that's quiet.
Okay.
kind of loud here, a lot of people and stuff. Just a second. Okay, this is better?
Yes.
I think I'm still kind of in shock, okay?
Yeah.
Scott was killed Thursday between 6 and 7 o'clock. He was coming to take me out to dinner. But he died immediately. He had been in a great deal of despair and despondency since Michael was sent to Iraq. And he was doing really badly. About an hour before he died, he said to me he was watching the news a lot. I said, turn it off. Please turn it off, because he had been obsessing on it so much. And all day they were talking about a Abuja raid. And he was a very gentle man. He held his feelings in a lot. He didn't say very much. And I wrote on DU that I was different than him. I was the kind of person that when I got depressed, I got angry. I went out and I'd scream and fight and holler and protest. Scott, he'd hold it in. And he went out and hit a tree about a half a mile away. I could see the tire tracks. I walked down the road. He died pretty quick. And he wants me to keep fighting. He didn't get to spend this year with his son. He didn't get to see his son come home from Iraq. His son should have never gone to Iraq. He didn't get to spend his birthday with his son. I believe in my heart of hearts that my husband is in another form. He's purity and goodness now. He's as pure as it gets. He's as good as it gets. He's pure compassion now. And I believe that he is with Michael now, holding him up. Michael's on his way home. I can't find out where Michael is. This morning I found out that what happens is that they send the kids back to either the East Coast or the West Coast. We don't know what city. We don't know what place. I haven't heard from Michael yet on the phone. I've been waiting all day for a call. Evidently, when they arrive, then they have to go get a USO to the USO at the airport and get a voucher so they can come to the nearest airport. And then one of us has to go to the airport and get him. The word I get is that Michael is in really bad shape, because the last words Michael said to me before he was sent to this war, he whispered in my ear, and he said, Marianne, if I go to this, going to kill my dad. And you know what? He did.
Yeah.
And you know something else, guys? Here's how I feel right now. And it's mixed emotions, because sometimes I'm not too good and sometimes I'm okay. You know what I mean? That's how it works. That's how it works when you're in grief. You're laying on the floor one day and you're standing up the next. It's like a roller coaster. Child's not going back to Iraq. He's not going back. There's no way in hell they're going to take that kid back. And I want everyone who is listening now to call Senator Levin's office.
And Senator Carl Levin of Michigan.
Carl Levin of Michigan, who is my senator on the Armed Services Committee, at 202-224-6221. And tell him Michael Allen Shepherd, S-H-E-P-A-R-D, of the 428th Military Police Company, is not going back to Iraq. He's going to stay here. They have no right to send him back. He couldn't be with his father this year. He's not going to see his father on this earth again. He has every right to be here with his family and not go back to Abuja Rabe and stand there and be a target for a fake war. That child has to come home and stay home.
How old is Michael, Marianne?
21 years old.
Yeah. And how long has he been in the service?
He's been in since last year. They sent him in February to Abu Ghraib, and he didn't want to go. And Michael's voting for Kerry. And Michael was against this war from the beginning. He was afraid. He didn't want to go to jail. He said to us, I'm just going to go. I'm going to go, and then I'm going to come back. And he kept telling his dad, I'll be back. But now he's coming back, and Daddy is dead. And that's what he has to face.
Yeah.
There is no way in hell that kid is going back to a war zone.
Marianne, can you give us...
I'll put my body down between him and whoever tries to take him. I will. That's how angry I am.
Can you give us the senator's phone number again, please?
202-224-6221. And I thank you very much for allowing me this forum today, because I'm so, so vehemently going to keep that child here.
Well, Marianne, I hope the senator's office will get a lot of calls. You know, there was a huge outpouring on the Internet over this situation. And, Marianne, please know that you have many friends.
I know.
Many friends who want to help you and comfort you. And we know you're a strong woman, but that doesn't mean that your heart aches any less than anyone else's. We're here to help your heart heal. A day, an hour, a minute at a time, it doesn't matter. But healing won't be easy.
I know.
But we're here for you to hold your hand when you need it or give you a hug when things seem hopeless. That's what friends are for. And please know that there are many of us out here who genuinely grieve for you, who support you and pray for the best of all outcomes in this unspeakable tragedy.
To all the people at DU, if I could right now, I would give you a hug, give you all a kiss, and thank you, because I had no idea, okay?
Well, I think there's a big group hug going on right now.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me
Marianne, we'll be thinking of you.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today, and best wishes.
Hi.
Well, it's a little tough talking to that lady right now. She's got a pretty bad time going on right now, and we hope Michael gets home soon. I think, can we take a break right now, Biz? Yeah, I think we'll pause for a break right now, and all of you on the phone, hang in there, and we'll be right back.
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show.
When it comes to life insurance, people often make some serious mistakes. Today, insurance advisor Anthony Domino Jr. highlights a few of them.
Life insurance is effectively all about time and money. The product you buy is typically based upon how someone depends upon you financially. Some people stick their finger in the wind and say, I need $1 million or $2 million. That's not the best way to handle it. The concept of human life value is something that's quantifiable and is determinable.
What about the time issue?
As far as the product that people buy, they mistake and misunderstand the amount of duration or time that they'll need life insurance. People either need life insurance for a short term, resulting in a term insurance situation, or for a longer period of time, which would be permanent.
Many people also misunderstand the cost of life insurance. Rather than focus on what life insurance will cost this year, think about its cost over the long term. This Financial Security News Minute has been brought to you by the Life and Health Insurance Foundation for Education.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Nervous Nellies are saying that coal-fired power plants emit unhealthy levels of mercury vapor, which contaminates our seafood. Yes, mercury poisoning can cause neurological damage in children, but is that necessarily a bad thing? Now that we're outsourcing our tech support jobs to India, we no longer need smart workers. Instead, we need compliant employees who will put in longer hours for less money. So if your mom chowed down on tilefish while you were in the womb, you've got a leg up on the new economy. President Bush relaxed clean air standards so we can burn more coal than ever without monitoring mercury levels. Don't worry. With mercury, you won't remember what you were worried about in the first place. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Pick up the billionaire!
Democrat can win the seat in Congress from Southwest Florida. Unlike Republicans, this Democrat stands for equal opportunity, family-supporting jobs, better public schools, and a cleaner environment, not with special interest. Who is this Democrat?
I'm Robert Neal. I'd be honored to earn your support.
To learn more about Robert Neal, visit robertnealforcongress.com, authorized by Robert Neal for Congress Committee, Gerald Levy, Treasurer.
From Joey Reynolds to Matt Drudge, Power Talk 1200 is your weekend choice for Power Talk. And now, back to the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
And a pleasure it is to be with you here this afternoon. Certainly is. And I want to, where did I put my little list here? I made my, you know, I'm so bad here in the studio having lists sitting all over the place, and then I can't find them. I make lists so that I'll seem organized, and then I seem very unorganized because I can't find my list. I want to say a very special thank you to some folks, to so many of you, and next week I'll expound upon this, but I want to say a very special thank you right now to Ben Birch and Jeff from New York, from the New York Bureau, and Amanda, and Tanya, and Eric. We had a little fundraiser this week for the program. It takes money to keep the show going, and we had good results. We had great results, and it was because of the generosity of so many of you. And I do want to thank you for that, and I want to single out a couple of people, Tanya and Erica, for some special help. And as always, you know, folks, those of you listening locally here, if you can't catch the show live, you can always go to www.whiterosesociety.org. And a lot of good shows from the left on there. If you like radio from the left, you'll like WhiteRoseSociety.org. So be sure and visit that. But Ben was a great help this week, along with Jeff and Amanda and Tanya and Eric. I don't know how to thank you, folks. I'm not very good at that. It'll just have to do me saying a huge thank you. I'd give you all a big hug if you were here. And also, I want to mention on Sunday, August the 29th, one of the biggest and most important protests in a generation is going to take place in New York City. It's a massive march and rally on the eve of the Republican National Convention. And they're going to have, let me see if I get this right, Sunday, August 29th, the world says no to the Bush agenda in New York City and Naples. And it's going to be from 4 to 6 p.m., Collier County Republican Headquarters, 194 9th Street, North Naples, Florida, at the corner of 2nd Avenue North and U.S. 41. It's across from Sunshine in the hospital high-rise parking lot. And if you can't make it to New York, do join them in Naples for a solidarity protest in front of the Republican headquarters in downtown Naples. Again, it's on the southeast corner of the intersection of U.S. 41 and 2nd Avenue. I'm sure a good time will be had by all. That's John and Karen Dwyer from Pax Christi organization. You know how to get a hold of them if you need to. And be sure and remember, we'll talk about this a little later on in the program. We'll bring it up one more time. And let's see, where else were we on here? Let's go back to the phone right now. And let's talk to Dee in Sanibel. Dee, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. That lady, what a dear sweetheart. I hear her agony, and I will pray for her. I'm a conservative Christian, and I just want to say that I don't know where I would be. I know the war was right, because somewhere along the way, when with Clinton, we were lost. For 8 years, they laughed at us. They thought we were idiots. They bombed us.
Who laughed at us?
All the Muslims.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question here. How many people were killed in the United States here during the Clinton administration from bombings during his administration?
There was the Colby. There was the
now, and how many ship. People? How many people were killed here in the United States during the Clinton administration?
Do you think
Bill Clinton could get on a boat and go over and go around and round and round the U.S. coal and protect him from people bombing him? Are you
right.
dumb enough to say something like that?
That's
my God,
George
lady.
Bush.
Thank you for your call. Jesus. You know, I'm sorry, but when someone that idiotic and that stupid calls me, I just lose it. The USS Cole. Should I blame Ronald Reagan for what happened in Beirut? Should I say that 230 Marines died because Ronald Reagan wasn't patrolling the area with a rifle? My God! What kind of an... What is wrong with people that believe that kind of crap? What's wrong with you? You've got a screw loose someplace. Pardon me, but I'm just amazed that anybody with all the information available to you these days on the internet, on radio, on TV, all the places where you can get all this information, that you could be that misinformed about what goes on in this world. But you know what's scary? There are millions of people like that woman. Millions. Millions of people gone to the polls in November and saying, yeah, I'm going to vote for George Bush because he's a good Christian man and he's going to save us from those dirty Muslims. That's what they're thinking. They don't give a damn about the economy. They don't give a damn about the schools. They don't give a damn about the economy. They don't give a damn about foreign relations. They don't care about anything of that except good old George Bush, our good Christian man. He's going to save us. Yes, he's going to save us. Oh, he's done such a good job already. How many days is it since they said he was going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive? How many is it now? How many soldiers have died in Iraq? How many weapons of mass destruction have we found? Fascinating to me. It's fascinating to me. You know, this country is going down the tubes right now, and it's going down the tubes right now because of good old, plain old-fashioned stupidity. Stupidity! And I swear to God, I don't know where it's all coming from. I didn't know all my life until just a couple of years ago that at least half of the United States were dumber than a brick. I don't get it. How are you able to tie your shoes in the morning if you're not any smarter than that? Oh, man. John in Cape Coral. John, welcome to the show.
Well, it sounds to me like you're all fired up.
Oh, Jesus. I tell you, when someone calls and says something like that to me, I know well.
Well, you know something? It was about what I was calling for. I mean, I think I identify with everything that you say, guy, so you're not alone. I just got to tell you that. You know, I've been hearing about the Swift boat thing. How many weeks have you been talking about
it? You got a spare blood pressure pill on you?
No, I'm sorry, and it wouldn't work over the radio anyway.
John, you've caught me. I think this is the third week I've talked about it, and you're right.
I think it's more than that.
I think it's three for me, but you're right. We had a week off in there, so make it, you know, calendar-wise, 4 weeks.
And, you know, I'm to the point where I don't want to hear about it.
I know.
And I'll tell you why. You have a man, and maybe stop me when I'm wrong, but you have a man who put his life on a line out there, was wounded I don't know how many times, got so many medals for it, and I don't know about these different medals because I never served in the military. I had a occupational deferment during the time, which was legal. I guess it was moral because they granted it to me. But here it is. Here's a man who served, and we keep discussing whether the wounds were legitimate or not. I guess he didn't die for it, and he wasn't Max Cleland, who had three limbs blasted off. But he was injured, and the U.S. Navy recognized it. And then you have his opponent, who was practically AWOL, or was AWOL, in the National Guard, never got wounded, never did anything. But we're discussing Kerry. I mean, I think they have changed the topic around and put a smokescreen up that we're discussing the wrong thing.
You're right. And John, it's my intention today, and I haven't really gotten around to it yet. It's my intention today, at least here locally for this show, to put that business to rest. It's time to move on. I think they had their fun with it, and they did.
I think there's a greater issue here, and if I could.
Sure.
And I think your last caller and you brought it out beautifully. If I could try to put it into words, and I'm not that good, but let me try. The issue is John Kerry came back from the war and recognized there was something morally wrong in what we were doing in Vietnam and had the courage to speak out about it. for which he's getting blasted today again.
Yeah.
And there is a parallel, and I think people have to look at it. There is a parallel of what he did then and what happened then to what's happening today. And the parallel was your caller, Marianne, who said, I'm not going to have my boy go back and get killed for a wrong war and a wrong cause. Now, if people look at the parallel of what John Kerry did during Vietnam and the courage he had in speaking out, she was saying the same thing today about Iraq that Kerry was saying about Vietnam. Do you see where I'm going?
Absolutely.
And if we start looking at this, and why is Kerry the man we should be electing for president? Let me see if I could put it into words and see if I'm right or see if I'm wrong, sir. If Kerry had the courage and the wisdom in his youth to do what he did after getting wounded in Vietnam, he's got the courage to get us out to do the right thing today in Iraq. And look at the parallels between Iraq and Vietnam. We are in a war we can't win. We're losing our boys close to 1,000 for a cause that we can't really understand. This young lady said, oh, it's right for us to go in there. Well, people said it was right for us to go into Vietnam. We had the domino theory then, which was proved untrue. We had the same theory with stopping all those Arabs who now understand we're tremendously bold. Well, it's the same thing as with the communists. It didn't work then. It isn't working today. And if this man had the wisdom to see what was wrong with our military and our military structure then, maybe he's got the wisdom to see it today.
You know, you're exactly right, John. And what it comes down to it is one of these men has morals and the other one doesn't.
Well, one of these men used it as a, and let's come back to something. One of these men, who was our current president of the United States, used this as a photo op to make himself look good and bold and brave and swagger onto an aircraft carrier deck and yell, mission accomplished. Everybody forgets about that.
Well, and he was all for the war.
He swaggered on there. This was a photo op. Let's not forget about that photo op. You notice the Republicans don't use it anymore.
Right, right.
And look at the amount of American troops getting killed now, and now he's admitting maybe he was wrong.
Yeah,
this is leadership?
A miscalculation. John, I wanted to expound upon that. One of these men has morals and the other one doesn't. It's a moral issue here. I was against the Vietnam War. Many people I know were against the Vietnam War. George Bush was all for the Vietnam War, and yet he chose not to go. When it was his turn to go, and he was for the war, I think he should have gone. But he didn't. He found a way to hide, like many of us did.
Like myself.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't out going, hey man, I love this war and I think this is good. And so we have a man who was against the war that had the courage and fortitude to go, even though he was against it, and come home and speak out and speak his mind and speak his courage about it, and they're cutting him down? Oh, come on.
I mean, there is something, you know, people have to look at this bigger picture guy. And the bigger picture is that we had a young man of 27 years old who had the guts and the fortitude to get on nationwide TV, the Dick Cavett Show, and speak his mind. That tells you the type of man he is.
Well, and they're doing the old Republican smear trick on these ads. When John Kerry got on and said about the babies being killed and the hooches being burned and all this sort of thing, he had been to a meeting in Detroit the prior week. And when he testified in front of them, he told them, and I can't give an exact quote, but I'll paraphrase, what they told me at the meeting last week was this. And he explained all these things. It wasn't John Kerry that sat down in front of them and said, hey, I saw all this and I saw that. He was merely repeating what other soldiers, and if you've been around long enough like I have to know lots of guys who have been home from Vietnam, we all know some of that stuff happened.
And we know what's happening in Iraq, too. And
absolutely.
Look at that. Look what happened in the prison in Iraq and what we have been part of. This is not a moral war we're fighting over there. Look at the parallels between between Vietnam and Iraq.
Absolutely.
And this is there's a smokescreen to cover this. And what we've been doing, and every time we argue this, we're perpetuating the smokescreen that's being erected.
You're right.
And the fact that Kerry had the courage, the guts, the fortitude to speak out against it at 27 years old. And he has the fortitude and the guts to speak out against it now.
Right.
And this is a man who's a leader, and he's leading us, and except that these people don't want us to follow him. I mean, I think that we have to look at this thing clearly. There is a moral issue out there which people are not looking at. And I think the moral issue that is being has to be looked at is the parallel between Vietnam, Iraq. We were wrong for going in. We're wrong for staying in. We're not accomplishing anything. And we're up to about 1,000 American lives which are being thrown down. And you had a lady pouring her heart out on your show about the loss that she is facing. Well, America's going to face this, and they're going to be a lot more Mary Ann's unless we begin to wake up and say, hey, we're into something that isn't working. It's making a mistake. We're alone in the world. We have no allies. We need new leadership.
Right you are, John. Hey, I got to move on. I got a board full here.
I hope I've calmed your blood pressure.
Well, I'm a lot calmer.
And I hope one thing. I hope we can focus on the real issue because we haven't been doing it.
We'll get back to it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, John. 1978. I'll get back to the phones here in just a second. Everybody hang on, Vince and Gordon and Tina and all the rest. In 1978, Bush, while running for Congress in West Texas, now listen carefully to this, all my Republican friends that love this man of good character, this good Christian imposter. In 1978, Bush, while running for Congress in West Texas, produced campaign literature that claimed he had served in the United States Air Force. This was in his campaign literature. According to a 1999 Associated Press report, Bush's congressional campaign ran a pullout ad in the Lubbock Avalanche Journal that declared he'd served in the United States Air Force and the Texas Air National Guard, where he piloted an F-102 aircraft. Bush lost that congressional race, but 21 years later, the Associated Press asked him about the ad, and the news outlet had good reason to do so, because Bush had never served in the Air Force, you see. He'd only been in the Air National Guard, but when the AP asked Bush if he'd been justified in claiming service in the Air Force, Bush, then the governor of Texas and a presidential candidate, said, well, I think so, yes, I was in the Air Force for over 600 days. You ever hear anything about that? I got news for you, George. I got a quote here someplace from the Air National Guard that says, I'm sorry, pal, when you're in the Air National Guard, you are not in the Air Force. And yet he was out there saying he was. Oh, well. Oh, well. Oh, well. Going to go to Vincent in Cape Coral. Vincent, welcome to the show.
How are you, sir?
Good.
That last call took most of my thunder, but I'm just flabbergasted at this Bush character. You know, I saw on the Internet this state legislator from Texas that said he was ashamed. That
I got the clip here, and it won't play for me today. Makes me mad.
Feels terrible that he pulled strings to get George a cushy job in the Air National Guard.
I wonder how much we'll see that tape all over the news and notice that it came out on the weekend.
Right. And then there was a guy on Hardball two nights ago, McCluskey, a Republican, who says if that was Jack Kennedy or even Bush's old father, he would have never went to war, because being in war and sending young people to die in war are two different things.
Exactly.
And it's just a matter of character, you know. I'll never forgive what he did to John McCain in 2000. And the only Republican I really respect is John McCain. What he did to him was just unbelievable. And I can't understand why the American people don't see through this phony.
It disappoints me, not in George Bush. I'm not disappointed in him. I'm disappointed in the people that back him. I just can't. It flabbergasts me. It does.
And I have lost total respect for Dole after what he said about him. I mean, at least they both came from privileged backgrounds, and at least John Kerry had the nerve to put his butt on the line and willing to die for his country.
Yeah, I don't care if he went over there and did patrol at an air base or something. It doesn't matter to me. He volunteered to do it.
Exactly. And, he was an alcoholic and a drug addict till 40, which is not, everybody's got issues. you know, but finding God and saying, you know, now he goes to a higher power or God to make his decisions, to me that doesn't sit right, because who says his God is any more intelligent than the gods of the Muslims pray?
Well, that's exactly right. And I thank you so much for your call, Vincent.
Bye-bye.
Do appreciate hearing from you. Well, who are we going to go to? Oh, we've got Tina in Anaheim, California. Tina, welcome to the show.
Hey, Guy, how are you?
Well, it's good to hear from you.
You know, I had to call in when I heard Dee from Sanibel call in. I prepared something. It's very modest. I'll make it quick. But I did want to thank Dee and George Bush. I don't know if you and I have talked before, but I don't know if I told you I'm Jewish.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But I'm actually considering converting because of people like Dee and George Bush, because they identify as Christians. George Bush said Jesus was his favorite philosopher, and of course I've been sitting through 3 3/4 years of his presidency, and so they made me go seek out the word of Christ. And when I read it, I was profoundly inspired. So to Dee, I just wanted to say that I'm sitting here in front of Christ's Sermon on the Mount, and they say, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And of course you realize that the news indicated that poverty levels rose in America last year.
Right.
And that for the first time it's white male families headed by white males that are the increasing, the largest group that's increasing in terms of the poverty level, you know, whereas it used to be single parent families with women.
Right.
The next line of the Beatitudes is, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. So that would be like the families of the victims on 9/11 while George Bush took vacation most of his first year in office and didn't bother to read the intelligence briefs that were sent to him. The parents and families of our dead and wounded servicemen, they're mourning. So there's more blessed people there. The families of civilians in Iraq, you know, a country who had no people on any of those planes on 9/11, they, of course, are mourning. And then the next line says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. So I would pretty well consider that to be all those southern churches where George Bush went and campaigned, because I really do believe that many of those people are good-hearted Christians who use the divisive rhetoric that he has campaigned on, such as slandering John Kerry. Now, there won't be much earth left to inherit, because it'll be filled with depleted uranium. The water will be polluted. The air will be polluted. But, hey, we have an inheritance to look forward to. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I would believe that would be those of us who are dying to see the truth come out about all this. Blessed are the merciful. I've got to say, even after all these years of George Bush's presidency, I don't hate the man. I really pity him. I believe in the end of our life, we all have to look back on what we created, because you're always either creating or destroying something. And I do believe that at some point we all have to face up to that. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And then I think of George Bush sitting on CNN talking to Larry King while Carla Faye Tucker was imploring for her life to be saved, and he's mocking her, going, please don't kill me, please don't kill me, like the 500 or so people he killed while he was governor of Texas, some of whom may have been factually innocent. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Well, hey, there's a commodity in America right now that's in short supply, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. You know, kind of like going to serve your country in a war that you later find out is unjust, and then having your country slander you via their corporately owned media while they cover for a guy who has enriched the exact people Christ said couldn't get to heaven easier than a fat person could get through the eye of a needle. So, I really want to thank Dee, because out of people like Dee and George Bush, I went to go look up Christ's words for myself, and I'm really considering converting now, because what Christ has to say is really great. If I had had to base it on people like Dee, who call in, say they're a Christian, and then talk about Bill Clinton and the USS Cole, I probably would have thought horrible things about Jesus Christ. But when it comes down to it, I can now see that Jesus Christ isn't all that bad. It's just that some of his followers need a friggin' lobotomy.
Jesus Christ would be thrown right out of the Republican Party today. He'd be thrown out on his ear if he was in, they'd get rid of him. He has, there's nothing, nothing that the Republican Party has in common with Jesus Christ. Nothing. And I'm sorry if that sounds a little rash. Nothing.
And then the last thing I would just like Dee to know, because she's sitting in Sanibel and can't respond, is that when she goes to bed tonight to pray, I'd like her to pray to God to transform the national language from something other than the bile she spewed when she called into your show.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Tina, a great call. Thank you very, very
much. Thank you for humoring me, guys. Take care.
As always. We got Gordon in one California call to another. We got Gordon in California. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. Thanks a lot for taking my call. Listen, Guy, I want to apologize to you. I have not given you one penny for your show. And the reason is I've been out of work for 6 months.
Well, how could that be? They've got a great economy going on right now. Come on, Gordon.
I know. And it's like every time I listen to you, I feel like, I should give him some money. But I think I'm going to get a job here soon, so you're going to be hearing from me soon as far as money goes.
Great.
God bless Mary Ann. She and her family will be in my prayers. Have you talked about this Ben Barnes yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was so proud of myself. I went out and hunted down the clips and all to play today, and all, for some reason I must have them on a WAV file or something here that I can't get them to play on my laptop. Oh.
Yeah, it's the lead story on Salon.com. It's just fascinating to me.
How much do you think the mainstream press will go with this story?
Almost zero, I think.
Yeah.
And interesting quote. He says, quote, "And I walked to the Vietnam Memorial the other day, and I looked at the names of the people that died in Vietnam, and I became more ashamed of myself than I have ever been, because it was the worst thing I ever did, was help a lot of wealthy supporters and a lot of people who had family names of importance get into the National Guard. And I'm very sorry about that, and I'm very ashamed, and I apologize to you as voters of Texas."
Right.
And
well,
he goes on to slam the, I call them the Swift Vote liars for Bush. Goes on to slam those
I think those men are I'm really disgusted with them. I really am. This John O'Neill, he's lower than dirt. There's just no question about it. He's as low as they go.
Right.
Gordon, thanks for your call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
I think we can take one more call till the top of the hour. By the way, 888-602-7500, 01, 02, 03, and 04. And we've got Amanda in Georgia. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy. I want to thank you for giving Mary Ann the chance to really vent. That was so sweet of you. And
well, it's a little tough to talk to her today, don't you
think?
Yeah,
I've been talking to her since Thursday. It's really tough talking to her. I want to say something about the lady. The lady who called in, is she from your area?
Yeah, the good Christian lady from Sanibel.
Good Christian lady?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, she better... I'm going to have to pray for that lady. See, I'm a Christian, too, and she's done an Archie Bunker, she and George Bush on my faith. After someone like Mary Ann calls in, and then she says what she says, the reason I asked if she was from your area, she better go back and read the Bible where God has his way in the whirlwind. Didn't y'all just have a heck of a whirlwind down there?
We sure did.
Yeah, okay. These kind of people, they have hijacked my faith. In my opinion, they're no better than the Taliban. No better. And it irritates me to no end. Nowhere in my Bible does it say, blessed are the bomb makers. And when she can hear someone like Mary Ann who calls in and then diss her in such a fashion, just burns me up.
Yep.
Burns me up. And I can't take too much more of this compassion.
No.
Compassion, conservatism. I really can't. You know, these people are nuts.
Well, we're going to get a good sample. You know, what are they going to do at the convention? They'll trot out some of their more moderate people. You're not going to see Tom DeLay out on the stand. You're not going to see, you know, you're not going to see any of the hardcore ones out there. I don't know who they're going to find. They'll find somebody to go out and be nice.
Yeah, these people are so funny. Do you remember the 2000 convention where they trotted out all of the minorities and then, and then they diss them. They don't believe in anything. They won't meet with the Congressional Black Caucus. These people are dangerous. This is the most important election we have ever had. The hatred that is spewing from people like Rush Limbaugh, who he needs to have his mouth sewed up. And, you know, everybody has a right to freedom of speech, but when you're promoting hate, to me that's inciting a riot. And I'm not promoting hate. I don't hate George Bush, but I sure hate his policies.
I feel exactly the same way. And, folks, I do want to remind all of you that all of our dear Republican friends that are watching or listening today, when you're watching your convention this week, and I'll be watching some of it myself because I like a good hoot as much as the next guy, but when you're watching it, count all the minority and black faces and everything out in the crowd there, will you?
You'll see a lot.
There'll be more on the stage than there is out in the crowd.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a picture where Mr. Bush, was somewhere, and I've never seen so much white since I cooked the last pot of rice.
Yeah.
And, but like I said to Marianne, you know, if she does listen to the archives, don't pay any attention to those kind of people, because the people on Democrats Underground and everyone who's listening to Guy, the people with a brain in their head, they really think a lot of you. They love you. And I want to express my thanks to Jeff. Jeff and I worked pretty hard on this. And thanks to everyone who helped support us on trying to help Marianne. And that lady doesn't realize it, but she's just one heartbeat away from being where Marianne is.
That's
and
right.
I bet her son isn't over in Iraq.
No.
But
you can usually tell, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, I got to move on. I got news coming up. Amanda, at the top of the hour, I thank you for your call, and I thank you for all your help this week.
No, thank you.
Thank you so very much.
We
depend on people like that. We're Democrats. We work together for the good of one another. Call it what you want. I call it love and goodwill. That's what I call it. You're listening to The Guy James Show, 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida. We'll be back after the news.
A Democrat and proud of it, Guy James. Coming up on the top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
President Bush on the campaign trail in Ohio before heading off to the Republican convention in New York. I'm Dave Schreiber, and Mr. Bush reached out to voters in the battleground state.
I'm here to tell you I've got the energy, the desire, the vision to serve this great country for four more years. That's what we're here to talk about.
The president in Lima, Ohio, Democratic presidential hopeful John Kerry, has been stepping up his attack on Mr. Bush. Kerry said today that the country cannot afford another 4 years of lost jobs and slow growth. Next week, Kerry plans to go to the Massachusetts island of Nantucket while the Republicans take the spotlight at their convention in New York City. The convention will nominate President Bush to run for a second term. There was a protest today in New York in advance of the Republican convention. Thousands demonstrated for reproductive rights. They walked across the Brooklyn Bridge to City Hall in Manhattan. ABC's Bill Greenwood watched.
The protesters are carrying signs, many of them saying, "I love pro-choice New York. Stop the war on choice." Another says, "Stand up for choice. Real sex education saves lives."
Two men, one 21, the other 19, under arrest in Brooklyn, New York, accused of plotting to blow up a subway station near the site of the Republican National Convention. ABC's Bob Jamieson has more on the men who said they hated the U.S.
New York Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly said the two men had been under surveillance for a year and their arrests were not directly associated with the arrival of the Republican National Convention. To the best of our knowledge, he said, the two were not associated with any organized group. But he said it was clear they had the intent to kill people, but didn't have the means to do it. It was also clear, Kelly said, that they wanted to carry out a large-scale criminal attack. Bob Jamieson, ABC News, New York.
Slow-moving tropical storm Gaston off the coast of South Carolina. This is ABC News.
Imagine all the instruments you hear playing are actually pictures created by different printers. Sounds fine now. But over time, those pictures would fade. One by one by one. With one exception. The picture made with Epson DuraBright inks. The only inks that give you pictures which actually resist fading, water, and smudging. Because anything else just doesn't play. For more information, visit Epson.com.
It's back to school time, and if you want a great deal, buy the Epson Stylus CX6400 All-in-One with DuraBright inks and get a $20 mail-in rebate from Epson, plus a $30 rebate from select retailers. See Epson.com for Epson rebate details. Now available at Best Buy, Circuit City, CompUSA, and Micro Center.
Collier County's Solid Waste Department reminds you to stack Hurricane Charlie-related yard waste curbside for pickup by Sunday, August 29th. For more information, call 403-2380.
There's a problem in Washington. Out-of-control spending, soaring deficits. Republican leaders in the U.S. Senate are on a spending binge. It's time someone stepped in. Hi, I'm Larry Klayman, and of all the Republican candidates in the race for the U.S. Senate, I'm the only one who will go up against the elite Washington establishment. I'll stand up against the U.S. Senate leadership when they betray conservative principles. I'll demand a stop to pork barrel spending. I need your support to win the Republican primary on August 31st. I'm Larry Klayman, and I approve this message.
He stands for better public schools, equal opportunity, and a cleaner environment. He'll vote to wipe out a federal deficit that weakens America for our children and grandchildren. He'll defend Social Security and Medicare. His name, Robert Neild, Democrat, candidate for the United States Congress.
I'm Robert Neild, and I'd be honored to earn your support.
To learn more, visit RobertNeildForCongress.com, authorized by Robert Neild for Congress Committee, Gerald Levy, Treasurer.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Your weekend choice for Power Talk. This is Southwest Florida's Power Talk 1200 WPTK.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I subject some of my good listeners to idiot calls like we get once in a while. And I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. I try and be a gentleman on this program. I do. I try so hard. But I feel a little better now. They got me a cold towel during the break there, and I took a few deep breaths. I feel just a little bit better. And so I want to give out my award for the person or persons of the week this week. And I thought a lot. There was a lot of news. And so I thought, well, I need to give the Guy James Show Award, a person or persons of the week, to the Iraqi soccer team. Very proud of those guys. They're doing real well over there. And, of course, it seems that our dear president, our good Christian, moral, ethical guy, was going, don't you know, he was going to fly over there. Yeah. And he was going to go down to that there Olympic Village, and he was going to pose with them. And wouldn't that be nice? Right before the convention, he'd have this picture of him and the Iraqi soccer team. Look what I, George Bush, have done for these Iraqi people. I am their savior. I have saved them. And everybody, look at me. Look at me. I've freed these people. I've given them democracy. My God, I'm wonderful. Oh, there was just one little hitch. One little hitch. The Iraqi soccer team said, no thanks. No thanks. We don't want to be seen with George Bush. We don't wish, and to quote him, we don't wish for the presence of Americans in our country. We want them to go away. These are Iraqi's favorite sons, the stars of the national support. They all seem to be saying the same thing. America's military is not wanted on their land. Another team member, Ahmed Manaji, demanded to know, how will Bush meet his God, having slaughtered so many Iraqi men and women? He's committed so many crimes. The athlete added that if he were not playing for his country, he would for sure be fighting in the Iraqi resistance. I want to defend my home. If a stranger invades America and the people resist, does that mean they are terrorists? Well, I'm a little shocked that they didn't want George Bush to come over there and have their picture taken with him, but it seems somebody's smart enough to know what kind of a guy they're dealing with there. They can spot a phony when they see one. They live, what is it, halfway around the world, and they don't get subjected to all these pictures that we do of George W. Bush, and they're smart enough. What the hell is wrong with half of our citizens being fooled by this guy? Oh, man. All right. Kelly, California. There must be the whole state of California on the line today. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy.
Glad to have you with us today.
Well, I can say I'm glad to be able to call in. It's been a long time since I was home early enough on a Saturday to hear you live.
Well, good.
And I should say that I really appreciate Ben Birch archiving everything for us so we can check in with you.
Oh, I sure do. I love Ben.
Yeah. This has been a great show, and you've got a lot of big things happening, and I just have a little thing to talk about.
Oh, well, what is it? No, nothing's too small to talk about on the show.
Well, I thought that you'd think that. I've been noticing for the last 2.5 years, we've had a law that was signed in 2.5 years ago that's kind of skipped over everybody's notice, and I know it's coming. I notice it's getting a little bit more attention just recently, so I thought I'd point it out. It's George Bush's wonderful No Child Left Behind.
Well, now that's one of my favorites.
I'm a teacher, so it's one of my favorites too. I can't tell you how much I appreciate what he's done to my classroom.
Oh, sure, and of course, a lot of people got to see on 60 Minutes how well that's worked out down in Houston.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our wonderful Secretary of Education, Mr. Page. What a good job he did down there with that No Child Left Behind. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and with all of the big issues, there's a lot of big issues there with No Child Left Behind. This one has kind of just slid under everybody's notice, and that's that there's a clause in No Child Left Behind that says that military recruiters are to have direct access to names, addresses, and phone numbers of all the students in public schools. And usually what happens, and there is the part of the law says parents can opt out, and the opt-out form that they would have to sign and return to the school to make sure that their child's name, address, and phone number was not
Send
released.
Send us in here. I'm sorry. Go
yeah,
ahead.
It's okay. Was not released to a military recruiter. Is usually sent out this time of year. It's time for registration. School's about to begin, or it's already begun, and parents get that great big huge packet of stuff, and somewhere buried in there there's a little thing that they're supposed to fill out if they don't want their son or daughter's name released to all of the military recruiters. So I thought I would bring that up. I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea that we make, just like library records, we make the personal information of students available like that.
Well, I am too. It's the start of something bad, real bad.
Something real bad. And I can say that last week I spent 3-4 days doing curriculum writing and meetings, all the different kinds of meetings that you do to get ready for school. And I was with one of my colleagues who's also a longtime friend, and we were supposed to be working on writing lessons to teach social studies to second graders. And she just wouldn't do it. She just couldn't get herself all turned around to do it. She was really upset. And finally I said, "What's wrong?" And she burst into tears and she said, their whole curriculum, it's all about teaching them about the government and the Constitution, and I can't teach them about the government. I don't want to teach this year. I hate my government.
I said,
tell me what's wrong. Well, her son just graduated from high school in June and got accepted. He's going to Berkeley, and she's terrified. She's terrified he's going to be drafted. So between the recruiters...
It could happen.
It could happen, and she knows it. Between the recruiters who have free access, they don't have to ask your permission, they don't have to call you up on the phone and say, can I talk to your son or daughter? They can just go to school and get what they need. And the threat of draft looming over all of the kids that we are graduating, things aren't in really good shape. We really need a change.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I'm disgusted with what's happening. And, you know, the reports that came out, what is it, last week, week before last, about the charter schools now, that everybody's been yee-hawing about, not meeting standards of the public schools. And then we have this huge scandal going on in Houston by a man so glorified by George W. Bush, this Rod Page, ahead of, you know, and what was it? He called the teachers' union a bunch of terrorists.
Yep, that's me.
Well, I don't know if you quite, but you know, it's nuts what's going on. You know, here's the fact: they don't give a damn about what's going on in the public schools. They don't.
No, they don't.
I mean, that's as obvious as can be. They don't give a damn what's going on in public schools, as long as they've got their private schools to go to, and Yale and all the preppy schools like Bushy went to, where he was a cheerleader and all. Why? Public schools don't matter, because when it comes right down to it, and this separation of the classes they're shooting for, there's going to be them and us, and we might not have any schools at all by then. They'll just they'll be the ones going to school, and we'll be the ones working like it used to be, you know.
Well, that's kind of the whole point of No Child Left Behind to begin with. The way you get all of the improvement is the dropout level. When you set everything so high and you make it statistically impossible to meet your continuous improvement goals, then people who know they're going to fail, who know that they can't do it, they drop out, and you've got a big core of cheap labor.
Now, let me ask you something. How much do you know about this test that they give in California and all over the country, supposedly? Is it the 10th grade that's so important when they take it?
It's every grade now.
Okay, but in Houston, I was seeing this method to their madness, where they held people over in the 9th grade for a couple of years and then skipped them to the 11th so that they didn't have to take the test in the 10th grade, and then they could show, A, they didn't have any dropouts in the 10th grade, and B, the scores were higher.
Yeah, that's it. As things, every state has their own set of tests and tests a little bit differently. But the way No Child Left Behind is written, it's now every grade, and they're going to have to be doing an awful lot of flip-flopping around to keep that going, because it says that you can't just have good test scores, and you can't just be a good school, but you have to get better every single year. And there's no possible way, to continue to improve when you're already... When you reach the highest that you can get, that's the highest you can get. You can't make them better. And many of the schools that are shown as failing are actually schools whose kids are achieving a lot more because they're not improving by their goal. Whereas the schools who had really low achievement, they've got a lot more room to grow, and so they look like they're gaining, and they get the pats on the back.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's every child. There's no child in America who attends public school who doesn't have to be tested and whose test scores don't count at this point in time.
Well, Kelly, it's good to hear from you, and we should appoint you as our California Bureau of Education there and keep us advised of what's going on in the educational scene in California.
You could do that if I'm still here, because if he comes to take my two sons, I don't care if they're men or not. my sons are grown. I mean, they're grown men, but if they don't want to go, I'm there with them.
Kelly, thanks so much for calling today.
Okay, you're welcome. I'll talk to you again.
Great hearing from you. We've got Charles out on Sanibel Island. Charles, welcome to the show.
How you doing, guy?
Okay.
Well, it took me a while to gather my thoughts after listening to Mary Ann and then followed by Dee. And I would like to tell everybody that Dee is the exception out here on Sanibel, but I can't.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. But I listened to them pretty closely, both to, and the psychology of it is interesting. That Marianne is obviously upset at George Bush and his policies. George Bush sent her loved one there, and has sent a lot of people's loved ones there, and I don't think has a good understanding of what that means. I don't think he really understands human life at times. The flippancy that they deal with these things are just amazing to me. That a guy that didn't go to war can support these things and can without a thought send people over out to their death, and you really get a feeling for it. You really get what it's like, the suffering, when you hear someone like Marianne. And then to hear Dee follow that call with she turned it into a hatred of Clinton,
right.
Which is amazing, because she obviously has such a hatred for the man and not necessarily his policies. And that's what I really don't understand, is how you can and what they don't understand is why we dislike George Bush so much, is that we just really dislike what he's doing to this country.
Absolutely.
And that it's not personal. It tends to border on being personal because of all the atrocities that I feel he commits.
It's just so difficult when it's, you know, it'd be different if it was one or two, but you know really, Charles, you take away the politics of fear that Bush has used throughout his ever since the 9/11. You take away the politics of fear. You know, you hear that all the time: terror, 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 terror. Take that away, and there's nothing left.
There's really
nothing there.
I asked a relative of mine, and she said, we asked her who she was going to vote for, and she said Bush. And we asked her why, and she says because of the terror.
Yeah.
And she lives in Atlanta, and I asked her, what kind of terror are you talking about? I these people really can't qualify it. It's an abstract fear that he's instilled in people, and now I'm scared.
Yeah, well, I'm scared for a different reason.
That's what I mean.
I'm scared of him.
Exactly.
You know, I mean that. I am. I'm scared for our country. I've never felt like this before.
I haven't either.
I was angry with Richard Nixon for doing what he did. I was angry with Bill Clinton for his indiscretions. I've been angry. I was angry over the Iran-Contra thing. I've been angry at a lot of presidents, but I've never felt like this before. I really feel like this guy's doing us in, and I've never come close to feeling that way before.
It's bewildering.
It is. Charles,
right,
thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Well, let's see. Let's go over to Ryan in Cape Coral. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Guy. You know, how are you today?
I'm good.
That's good. You know, I believe, Guy, that Joseph Goebbels and Lee Atwater are probably laughing in their grave at this
absolutely.
Thing. I mean, you know, the Republicans, they cloudy the water, they color the water, they don't deal with the real issues. I mean, the Republicans have no record to run on. I mean, they're a complete disaster. I mean, this has been the worst administration since Herbert Hoover for job creation. We've lost jobs. The deficit's at a record high. We have all this money going into Iraq, a war in Iraq. We have approximately two dead American soldiers being killed every day over in Iraq with no kind of exit strategy. They keep changing the reasons why we're there. One minute it's terror. One minute it's weapons of mass destruction. The next minute it's Iraqi freedom. The next minute it's get rid of Saddam Hussein. I mean, they are the most incompetent. They are the biggest disasters in this country. And, you know, I agree with you, what you and the last caller said. This administration really does scare me. Then you look at the Patriot Act, which has nothing to do with terrorism, but is about attacking our rights and does not get at the real issue. And, I mean, it's so many different things, Guy, that are very... And, you know, another thing about this Republican app that they're running, saying that Kerry wanted to cut the CIA and the, you know, the intelligence agency, don't people know, and this should be headline news, that in 1995, Porter Gus sponsored a bill that would cut the CIA by billions of dollars.
Oh,
and no one on cable television nowhere has anything to say about that.
Oh, no, it's John Kerry that wanted to do all that. Never mind that the guy going to be running the joint is, yeah, is the one that brought it up.
And you know, guys, it's very disheartening to me that we got the kind of cable news network they have. I mean, they have very deep financial interest in this administration. They want to deregulate even more. They want two or three different multi-billionaires to own everything, and so much is left go. I mean, if we're going to look into Kerry, what Kerry did, and you know, this whole thing with Dole saying about he didn't bleed, well, let me tell you, Kerry has shrapnel in him, and my father's a World War II veteran. My father has shrapnel in him, and he really bled, and I mean, for Dole to say, he should be ashamed of himself.
Oh, there weren't big enough bullets that hit him.
Do these Republicans really believe what their leaders say? What they? I mean, how in the world? I mean, you know, we've gone totally insane in this country, and that's what scares me. You know, they always talked about Nazi Germany, how, you know, it was a very intelligent, very enlightened country that went totally insane. Well, I often see, when I see this administration, I get the feeling more and more that that's what's going on here, Guy.
And these people, you know, all these people going along with them, it's pretty fascinating.
And you know, this other thing too, Guy, if I may, you know, they changed the overtime law, and they say, oh, it's only going to affect a few people. Well, that isn't true, because it's learned professionals. It used to be that learned professionals needed some type of degree and all that, but the definition of learned professionals has changed, Guy. It used to mean someone with a degree, but now it means people with work experience. I think a lot of people are going to be unhappy when they find out that this ruling affects
absolutely
them.
It's going to end up being 20 or 30 times more people than they
Yeah, it absolutely say. Will, and people better wake up. That's
hey,
all
thanks for
say.
Your call.
You're more than welcome.
Appreciate
Have a good
it.
Day. Okay, goodbye now.
Oh, gosh, phone lines everywhere. We got Ron. Ron, welcome to the show.
Oh, yes, Guy, thank you. I just wanted to give a quote from David Letterman a couple nights ago. He said, if Kerry had ducked the Korean War like the yellow-bellied Bush, he would not have had all the current trouble that he has. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
I think he meant maybe the Vietnam War. Yeah, that'll teach that Kerry to go volunteer for those them their wars. Yes, sir. That'll teach him. That'll teach the next guy that the military's out looking for. I wonder if there's anybody over in Iraq right now that's a young John Kerry, that this is, according to the Republicans, for 35 years, let me see, 35 years, for 2040, somebody that's in Iraq right now will be running for the presidency, you see, because they're over there right now getting some Purple Hearts and Bronze Stars and stuff, so that when they get out, they can run for the presidency 35 years from now. That's pretty much what the Republicans would have us think that John Kerry did. Okay, we're going to go to Michael in Estero. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello, Guy.
Hi, Guy. Yes.
Yeah, how are you?
Good,
Guy. I have frequent political debates with my father. He's a right winger, and I'm a Kerry guy. And he told me today that Kerry met with Ho Chi Minh in North Vietnam during the war. Is that true?
Nope, absolutely false.
Okay, and he said that there was some book that Kerry is refusing to publish that contains this story.
No, that's not true. He met in Paris with some of the Vietnam officials over there, the same ones that Henry Kissinger was meeting with, by the way, in order to try and make peace. But yeah, he met with them there, but no, he never met with Ho Chi Minh.
Okay. All right, just want to get
that's the kind of stuff that goes around on the internet. I'm surprised somebody doesn't have a picture with him and Ho Chi Minh slapping each other on the back, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
Okay, take care.
Well, we've got a lady on the line right now that I've been looking forward to talking to. As you know, in my opinion anyway, the main issue of this entire campaign is one of economics. It's the one that hits you right in the billfold. It is the kitchen table item that everybody should be sitting around and talking about, rather than who got what medals in Vietnam and so forth. It's one that hits us all, and it's important. And right now we've got Heather with us. Heather is a economist. Heather Boucher. Have I said that right, Heather?
Yes, you did.
Oh, I'm glad to get that right. And she's an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., and she's recently come out with a report called Hardships in America, The Real Stories of Working Families. It's it's a good one, and it's a hard-hitting, and, well, because it's got so many great facts. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I think the economic issues have been getting the short shrift by the Republicans. I think we want to talk about them more because, well, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican right now, what do you say how good this economy is and how good Georgia's done for the economy? I don't know what you say exactly, but what caused you to write this report?
Well, I think one of the things that we've been very concerned about has been how poor the U.S. labor market has performed over the past few years. We've seen lackluster job creation. We've seen now wages that are falling in inflation-adjusted terms, meaning that those folks who are lucky enough to have jobs are not seeing their pay rise at all. They're seeing their paychecks get smaller. So I think that the real concern was that there hasn't been a great deal of focus, it feels like, on what kinds of solutions we need to have to create jobs for all Americans who want and need them that provide them with living wages and, importantly, with access to health insurance.
Why do you think there hasn't been the emphasis put on this by this administration and maybe, in your opinion, past administrations? I don't know. Why do you think it doesn't get the attention it should?
Well, you know, that's actually a little bit unclear to me. I would think that any administration's first focus would be to create improved economic well-being for all Americans, and that certainly has not been the focus. One of the most important policies that has been implemented over the past few years have been the tax cuts, and the tax cuts have gone primarily to the wealthiest households, both in terms of the absolute number as well as the share. So we've seen tax cuts that have primarily benefited wealthy Americans, and contrary to the rhetoric, the tax cuts have not primarily gone to small business owners or people who are investing in jobs. They've gone to rich people, and those are two separate categories. So the tax cuts haven't been targeted at the kinds of cuts that would actually lead to job creation. They were just a give back to the wealthiest. So it's unclear to me why this administration didn't want to pursue policies that would create good jobs at decent wages for all Americans, because I would think that at the end of the day, that probably wouldn't be in their interest, because people would see that and go, wow, I'm not really benefiting from that, which is, I think, what the vast majority of Americans can say right now.
Well, Heather, what has this tax cut done for what I call my people, the middle America people who don't make a whole bunch of money? What did the tax cuts do for them?
Well, in 2004, the average estimated tax cut, and this is estimated by the Congressional Budget Office, an independent agency, the average tax cut for families in the middle fifth of income was a little bit over $1,000. The tax cut for families at the top fifth of income was nearly $50,000 in 2004. So you can see that middle America got about a 50th of what folks at the top got. $1,000, that's a good chunk of change. I certainly would think that was a lot if that came into my pocket. But you have to remember that this was also a period of time where more Americans have lost their employer-provided health insurance. And if you want to pay for health insurance on the open market, you're going to be paying a lot more than $1,000 a year. It's also a period in time when real wages have been falling. So people see their incomes fall, but this tax cut was not large enough to overcome the declining wages on average.
Well, I agree. The $1,000 would be nice if you actually got to put it in your pocket.
If you didn't then get your health benefits cut and your wages
health
cut.
Health benefits, your state taxes going up, your local taxes going up, your college tuition's going up. Yeah, it seems to me out of that $1,000, you're ending up with nothing.
Exactly. And I think that's what the problem is. You know, we've seen at the same time as people have, you know, the administration has talked about how great these tax cuts have been, you've also seen Americans taking on more and more household debt, which to me is an indicator that they're not doing all that well, because if they were seeing increases in their pay, they wouldn't be taking on all this debt. And we're seeing an increase in the number of folks filing for bankruptcy, which is, again, an indicator that folks can't really pay for all the debt that they've needed to take on just to sustain their standard of living.
Yes, the credit card bills are going up. The numbers of people who paid their credit card off zero balance every month has declined tremendously. That's straight from the credit card company, and I'm sure they're liking that. But sooner or later, somebody's going to pay the piper here.
Exactly. And I think that where it falls is it falls on middle America, folks moderate and low income. You know, I think there's another thing that's also important to bear in mind here, that one of the things that did not happen over the past few years was Washington did not give a lot of fiscal aid to the states. A lot of states were in hard fiscal times. A lot of states in general, everyone except for Vermont, can't run budget deficits. So when their tax revenues fell because of the bad economy, they had to make that up by cutting spending. What that's meant is that low and moderate income families have not only lost income and all the stuff that we've been talking about in terms of the labor market, but they've lost access to services. Their costs for higher education have increased dramatically, and the costs for and what kinds of services they could get through public health programs or Medicaid have the benefits have decreased and the costs have gone up. So there's other ways that the poor economy has filtered through into the costs that families have to face.
And it appears to me that a lot of the figures right now, when we talk about the economy jumping up and so forth, it appears to me that the Bush people have done a great job of cherry-picking numbers. For example, I wish I had the example here right now, but they picked the greatest growth that we've had in 20 years in the economy. They picked 3 months of this year and 3 months of last year. They just cherry-picked it to death, and the figures are lying quite a bit, I think.
Well, and a lot of those numbers have just been revised downwards. It was either Thursday or Friday, they announced that economic growth for the second quarter of 2004 was revised downward to only 2.8%. So even the cherry-picked numbers that they were talking about, a lot of these economic numbers, when they first come out, have to be revised a few months later as we get more information. So, you know, there has been a lot of that going on, and we see that also with the analysis of the labor market as well.
And 2.8% post-recession is nothing to write home about.
Oh, that's certainly nothing to write home about. And importantly, at a moment where it appears that the labor market is faltering again, over the past 2 months, we've created about a quarter of the number of jobs as we typically would in an economic recovery, only 110,000. Typically, you know, in any given month during a recovery, you see over 200,000 jobs being created. So the fact that they've revised the overall economic growth down for the previous quarter doesn't bode well for the labor market over the next few months, and I think we've already started to see that in the numbers for June and July.
Well, you as an economist must be somewhat dismayed when you look at these issues and see that it should be of imminent importance in this election, and yet you don't hear that much talk about it by either side. And you must be out there in the wilderness going, hey, 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 look at these numbers.
You've just described my job. No, it is. You know, in all seriousness, it's actually quite frustrating. You know, on Thursday, the U.S. Census Bureau released what are arguably some of the most important numbers this year, and that is the numbers on income, poverty, and health insurance coverage for 2003. And I've done, you know, a lot of talking to folks like you and other folks around the country about what that means, but I've also been watching how the media has been reporting that. And what's been so frustrating is that in most newspapers it's gotten a couple of paragraphs, maybe, you know, a couple minutes on the radio or television, and yet this data release really tells us how well families were doing in over the past year. So it is quite frustrating that it's not really kind of bubbling up, considering that it's our lives. This is how, you know, how much we can purchase, what kinds of lives we can lead, how much we have to work. It seems to me this is some of the most basic stuff.
Well, Heather, it's a big. I don't think sometimes people understand, you know, like the numbers came out, 45 million uninsured Americans right now.
Yeah.
Do people understand that, you know, we did some figuring on this, 45 million uninsured is more than all Americans age 65 and older.
Who, by the way, have universal health coverage,
yeah.
Which is amazing when you look at it, that, you know, folks 65 and over, 98-99% of them have health insurance, and you look at kids, and, you know, somewhere around 70% of them have health insurance all year. So it is hard, and it's hard to put that kind of thing in context. I mean, I think an easier way to think about that is that, you know, a little bit over 60% of Americans have health insurance through an employer, either their own or their spouse's. So that means three Americans under the age of 65 get in health insurance from an employer, which leaves 2 out of every 5 people out of that system. So if you look around in any room, you know, 2 out of every 5 people on average are not getting health insurance from an employer. And for those of us who have that, kind of scratch your heads and go, wow, what, how are those folks getting access to basic health care services?
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's a... I don't know what we do about it. I don't have the answer, that's for certain. But I know we had Roger Altman on today earlier. He's the Kerry advisor for the economy right now, and they're coming up with some good ideas what to do. But it just it's frustrating to me to see this issue. I guess it's just not a sexy enough issue for people. They'd rather fight over medals and that sort of thing. Who did this and what 35 years ago than talk about issues that are so important to each and every one of us.
Well, these are the tough ones. These are the ones that actually require that we make choices and that we confront some of the more important entities in the U.S. economy. I mean, especially, you know, when you look at the healthcare issue, you know, that was one that we tried to deal with in the early 1990s, and it kind of didn't go anywhere. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that insurance companies and pharmaceutical industries that make a lot of money off of the system as it is are going to fight tooth and nail to keep those profits and not rethink the distribution of health care in the United States.
All they're whining and dining those politicians even as we speak in New York City, and they did it at the Democratic Convention too.
Exactly. Both parties are not immune to this. And I think that's where a lot of the problem lies, you know, that the powers that benefit from this have access to so many more resources because they've been able to benefit from this financially. So it's kind of it creates this virtuous cycle for them, which makes it hard to create solid policy alternatives for those who don't benefit from the system as is.
What about the tax cut regarding the deficit? What do you think has been the true effect on it?
The tax cuts have led to the largest deficit that I believe we've ever seen. I mean, this is from an economist's perspective, this is one of the most astounding things that I've ever seen. You know, this administration took office with a surplus that they were going to distribute back to people through these tax cuts. By the time they got around to actually implementing the tax cuts, they had already, you know, that was already clear that it wasn't about the surplus anymore. It was about, they called it a job creation tax cut, which we can see now was entirely ineffectual at creating jobs. But what it did leave us is this huge deficit, which is going to make it much harder in future years to have sound economic policies. The first thing that a new administration is going to have to cope with is serious cutbacks in federal programs and money to the states in 2005, 2006, and beyond, as well as likely cutting back on some of those tax cuts at the very least, if they want to get to a balanced budget. So it's very unfortunate that the economy was in such a, in many ways, in a better place just 5 or 6 years ago, and that a lot of that has been really squandered by irresponsible fiscal policies.
Well, I hope those policies get pushed to the forefront. I hope our new administration, when we get it, and we're going to get a new administration, I hope they put it at the forefront of the list because it's, you know, it's... We put it off long enough. I don't think we can wait any longer. Heather, I thank you so much for being with us today. You've put some things in perspective for us. And I know these. A lot of times people don't like to hear numbers, but I just think people aren't putting nearly enough importance on this, and we plan on doing quite a little bit more of it in future shows.
Well, wonderful. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather Boucher, and again, she's an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. If you can get a hold of this on the Internet, let me see here. I'm going to look and see if I can find the Internet source for... I'll try and find that out. Oh, www.cepr.net. www.cepr.net. And you can see this Hardships for America. It's really an interesting work that she's done. And, folks, this economy's coming after all of us. Well, maybe not all of us. Some of our fat cat friends. It's not bothering them a whole lot. Hey, we've got to pause for a break right now. You're listening to The Guy James Show. 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. And we'll be right back after these words.
The Guy James Show.
Democrat can win the seat in Congress from Southwest Florida. Unlike Republicans, this Democrat stands for equal opportunity, family-supporting jobs, better public schools, and a cleaner environment, not with special interest. Who is this Democrat?
I'm Robert Neild. I'd be honored to earn your support.
To learn more about Robert Neild, visit robertneildforcongress.com, authorized by Robert Neild for Congress Committee, Gerald Levy, Treasurer.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Oh my, where does the time go? It's flying away today. You've still got time to get a call in if you'd like. 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, 7504. Give us a call. Always glad to hear from you. Let's go right back to the phones. Let's have Ryan in Wisconsin. Ryan?
Hey, Guy. Good afternoon to you, buddy.
Howdy.
Hey, yeah, I felt your pain earlier when that woman called in, and it at some point it really starts to make you personally offended at the stupidity of the American people, does it not?
It does. It certainly does.
I mean, I'm a numbers guy myself. I'm an accountant up here in Wisconsin. I do accounting for housing authorities, and I feel and see the hardships, and I see these budgets coming through with major cutbacks, funding restrictions. I hear the executive directors who run these housing authorities, which primarily benefit the poorest people in America, not that it benefits them, but it's there to help them out, the elderly and the disabled people. That's who it takes care of. It's not just a bunch of freeloaders who want to get a free rent check for the month.
Right.
And so then when I look at Congressional Budget Office report pointing that the tax cuts primarily went to the wealthiest people, when I see these new numbers on poverty and insured in America, when we see the largest federal budget deficit in history, and when we see veterans hospitals closing up all around the country, it makes me wonder, where is the disconnect between the media and what people think of our president and how he's doing, when the new poll numbers show that George Bush now has gotten a slight lead in some of the battleground states and indeed across the country. So what's your opinion on that? Why are people not paying attention?
Well, they pay more attention to these issues like this like the Swift boat thing, and they're swayed by it. There's no doubt. I mean, that's the reason they do those sort of things, because they work. And it's a sad testament to the voting public of the United States of America that an ad like that will work. I mean, here these guys went out and spent, what, a couple million bucks on some ads around, and they have influenced the election. There's no question about it. Now, I don't think it's put us in a position where we can't come back, because I still think we're even. But
Do you think the remedy for the Democrats would be, okay, if we can't beat them by being fair and being honest? Because I don't think those Media Fund and MoveOn.org ads are dishonest. They're pointing out job losses, incomes going down. They're pointing out uninsured people rising in America. Those ads aren't dishonest, like the Swift vote or Swift vet for truth ads.
You're right. And you know one of the tricks they love to do when they talk about MoveOn.org, and I'm sure you've heard this 100 times as well, as they say, well, look at these terrible ads, MoveOn.org. They compared Bush to Hitler. That is absolutely not true. They had a contest they had on their website, and you could submit your entry into the contest. And somebody entered that into the contest. It was not a winner.
No.
It was not an ad MoveOn.org ever ran. It was on their website because it was open for people to put in their entries, but it didn't win. And MoveOn. But you hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, they ran ads comparing him to Hitler. Not
yeah.
true.
It's ridiculous. I think the media is really letting us down. Did you happen to see Chris Matthews on Bill Maher real time last night on ESPN?
No, I read a pretty good transcript of it. I don't know what's happened to Chris Matthews lately, but he seemed to. I think he's tired of all the BS, and he's starting to clamp down on some of these folks and, about the spin that they try and do on his program and all.
Yeah, I've heard him twice now mention that he did vote for Bush, and you know that was probably about a year ago that I heard him mention that on Hardball. But last night on Bill Maher, it sounded like he's sick of what's going on in this country, and it doesn't sound like he's going to be voting for George Bush this time. So, anyway, I know you've probably got a few more calls to get to, so I appreciate you letting me vent my frustration right along with you.
Well, thanks very much for calling. We do appreciate it,
all right.
Ryan.
Have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.
It's amazing. I don't know. Our people's attention span isn't what it ought to be, and we end up looking at some pretty silly issues. And let's face it, when it comes down to it, this whole Swift Boat Veterans is a silly issue by a bunch of silly men. Guys that for some reason or another have decided to shed their dignity and their self-respect and just go out and lie their asses off to everybody they could. And that was the idea, to get on as many shows as they could. I think Hannity and all the shows like that had every one of these guys they could get on and had them on as often as they could. O'Neill, what a weasel this O'Neill guy is. You know, I hate to belabor the point, but I don't think I've ever in my life seen anybody go on TV and make a bigger ass of himself than this John O'Neill. I mean, on some of the shows, he goes on Hannity, and Hannity treats him like a king, because he treats all those liars like a king. But if he goes on a show to somebody where they ask him honest questions and get answers and, you know, put him back in his face, he looks like completely the fool. I mean, he looks like such a fool. And he goes right back for more. I'll give him credit. I really do. I'll give him credit. Going to go to Pat in Naples. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been listening for the last hour, and I'm here in Naples right now. I'm at my kid's Pop Warner game, but I'm a conservative, and I'm a Catholic. And what really, you know, I guess I dislike when I hear is, you know, you have politics and people are going to speak their own opinion of a certain thing, but to hear you call people, and I heard you say earlier that half the people in the country are stupid because they disagree with you. And, I mean, I just think that's very pompous to, I mean, we can have differences. I mean, there's some things I actually maybe agree with the Democratic position on, but to hear you call people stupid that disagree and, you know, just mock George Bush, I mean, if you don't like his policies, fine, but you mock him as this good Christian person. Well, he is a good Christian person. Now, if you don't like
all right,
his
now
policy,
that's your opinion.
Well, you're right.
And not allowed to give mine. What makes you? Tell me, what about George Bush makes you look at him as a good Christian?
Well, first of all, I am very much pro-choice, and I mean, Senator Kerry, who is Roman Catholic, one of the things that really bothers me is that as a Roman Catholic, and you know he does not have the moral character to stand up for what his faith has instructed him to stand up for. And
I'm not following you there. He has to go along with what his particular church says he has to go along with?
I believe that you should protect life, and I just think innocent babies have a right to live. And if Senator Kerry disagrees with that, I don't know how he can be Roman Catholic.
Well, you do know, don't you, that about, 45% of all Catholics are pro-choice?
Yes, I do, and I do have heartburn over that. What I don't understand is how you can just pick and choose the rules you want to follow.
Well, why would you condemn Senator Kerry when you go to church on Sunday? You're saying about his morals and his standards, when 45% of the people sitting in your church with you on Sunday feel the same way he does.
I think you might want to look at that. I don't know if you're saying it could be 45% of people who say they are Catholic, but then that might not be the same percentage of people who actually follow the faith every Sunday and go to church. And you know, I'm not I'm not saying Senator Kerry's a bad person. I'm not saying that. I'm very disappointed that he doesn't have the moral character to stand up for what his faith teaches. And I'm not, you know, and that's why I want to get from this, you know, you're stupid, I'm stupid. Let's go back to
what makes you think that George W. Bush is a good Christian.
Well, I think his stand that he is pro-choice, I think that is good. I think that he's a caring person.
He's pro-life, by the way.
Yes, he's pro-life, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously I am, and that is a factor.
And his mother is pro-choice. Is she a bad person?
Yeah, I'm sure that is, and I think even his wife is pro-choice.
Yeah. So let's throw that issue aside.
About George Bush, who's the president, not his mother, not his wife.
All right, let's leave that issue aside. What else tells you that George Bush is a good Christian man?
Well, can we get back what I called in for? Why do you hate people who disagree with you?
I never said I hated people disagreeing.
You've called them stupid all show for the last 2 hours.
I know a lot of stupid.
You say 50% of this country is stupid. That's exactly what you said. I wrote it down.
Well, I didn't say I hated them, did I? I know a lot of stupid people, but I don't hate them.
Well, I mean, so do you think anyone who has a different opinion than you is stupid?
I think anybody that
would... How do you learn? How do you grow?
I have a right to opinion just like you do, you see.
Oh, I do. I have a radio show here.
And I happen to think, that anybody who has fallen for the story that George Bush is a good Christian man is not maybe as smart as they ought to be, because that guy is not a good Christian man.
Why do you say he's not?
For one thing, he's a compulsive liar.
Now, see, that's not true either.
It absolutely is.
That is ridiculous.
Let me ask you, was he ever in the Air Force?
He was in the National Guard.
Yeah, but he said he was in the Air Force.
Well, are you mentioning that? I don't know the facts.
I do know the facts. I also know something else about him that you may not know.
Cambodia?
Huh?
Was John Kerry in Cambodia?
I believe he was.
Well, there's a lot of people that are saying he's not.
You don't know what you're talking about, because John O'Neill is the one that claimed Kerry was never in Cambodia. Isn't that correct?
There's been other people, and in fact, even one of the people that was on his boat. I don't remember the gentleman.
And the rest of the crew said that guy wasn't on the boat.
No, and then who was the guy? Is it Hurley that's been the spokesperson for Kerry on the TV?
No, let's go back to Cambodia. John O'Neill said that Kerry was never in Cambodia. None of them were in Cambodia.
And so did the guy that was on his boat.
The rest of the crew said the guy wasn't on the boat.
All the other flip boat commanders that were in the...
See, you won't listen to anything. I've got a tape of John O'Neill, the man that says none of them were in Cambodia,
telling
Richard Nixon to his face that he was in Cambodia.
That Kerry was.
No, that he himself was, John O'Neill.
Would you believe Nixon 20 years ago? Now you're going to leave Richard Nixon at your spokesperson.
No, this isn't Nixon's words. You're totally unreasonable. This is not Nixon's words. It's coming out of John O'Neill's mouth.
Okay.
You don't know what you're talking about. That's why I get so upset, because people call here and have these ideas about things, and they simply do not know what they're talking about. I'm sorry. I have to move on. You can't argue with a fence post. That's just how it is. Guy doesn't know his facts whatsoever. Where we got the liar saying that Kerry was never in Cambodia, and then he's telling Nixon that yes, he was. Nixon wasn't saying that. You know, folks, I started working in politics during the Kennedy campaign of 1960, and I answered phones, I passed out literature door to door, I dumped the trash, I virtually did anything that needed to be done at the local Democratic headquarters. It was a great experience. I worked hard because I believed in what this man Kennedy wanted to do for our country. He was truly inspiring. But I'm not sure I fully understood what it was to be a Democrat at that time. I think it takes time and some life experience before one can fully appreciate the ideals of the Democratic Party. We're not born on this earth with any natural affinity to be a Democrat or a Republican. We first need to establish a foundation on which to build our framework of our individual morality. And that takes time. We need to learn by personal experience what our feelings and attitudes toward the poor and the disadvantaged and the helpless. We must decide whether we're on this earth to help one another and be our brother's keeper, or are we here to look out only for ourselves? We need to decide if our liberties are worth defending, or rather just something we pay lip service to. We must examine history and decide whether we prefer the New Deal to the Great Depression, or the Fair Deal to McCarthyism, or we need to decide if we prefer the New Frontier to Watergate, and we need to decide if we want to be associated with the party of Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Wilson, and Roosevelt, Kennedy, and Clinton. Sure, I forgot some. Or do we prefer the leadership of men like Grant and Harding and Hoover, McCarthy, Nixon, Reagan, and George W. Bush? I learned which direction to take, and it was an easy choice for me. I'm a Democrat because the Democratic Party represents the best in all of us. It's the party of progress, and it embraces the policies that have made our country great and will keep it that way. The Democratic Party has worked for bold plans to improve the quality of life for all Americans, not just the chosen few. The Democratic Party is the party of universal health care, of common sense gun control, and the party of the common man, and it's the party that fights for the rights of minorities and women, making sure everyone in this country has equal opportunity regardless of skin color or your heritage. We're the party that fights to make sure no one is left behind and that all of us move forward together. We're a party of free thinkers, thinking ahead instead of dwelling on the past. We're the party of justice. And we're the party of the future. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
The Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive Producer, Gene Charles. Research Director, Michael Merrick. Production Manager, Frank Princeton. Program Coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Remember, Bucks fans,
we're going to get through this.
We're still in the preseason.
I'm sure you already knew that.
With that in mind, let's proceed. The Buccaneers' trip to Jacksonville had some ups.
From the 5-second and goal, Leftwich with one running back, Fred Taylor, drops the throw, his first pass, fires to his left, incomplete, picked off by the Buccaneers, intercepted,
and some downs.
Ryan Reese, ball stripped away.